from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the GoodAtheist.net podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
And today we have a very special mailbag episode.
Is it still really special when we do it every month?
No, it's special because after the mailbag, there's an interview that I do. So it's like a double header, man. It's like fan service mailbag. And then part two is an interview with the president of the Atheist Alliance International and their upcoming event in Montreal, October 1st to 3rd, that we're taking part of doing the live podcast.
Yeah, it is pretty crazy. We are doing a live podcast at an atheist convention in Montreal, and we have no idea what kind of crowd we're going to get.
Yeah, it's true. When I was talking to, when I was doing the interview, Stuart was telling me that, he's the president, he was telling me that it seems to attract quite the big crowd, so...
Big doesn't help. I'm fine with there being a decent amount of people. I just want to know when we say, like, I don't know, cock or fart or donk, as we are wont to do.
Well, we just did.
We did. Then I just want to know if people are going to get all up in their arms, you know?
Well, what are they going to do? Are they going to kick us out?
I don't know. You know what? I had a dream where we got booed.
We got booed in your dream?
And we got booed.
Okay, well, then, therefore, if you are a good atheist listener and you are close enough to Montreal, then you have to go. To alleviate Ryan's fears, you'll have to be the Yelp
so of that Yates. If you are sitting next to the person that boos, you can punch them in the face and go, "No, sir, you do not boo them."
Yeah, that's right. We need muscle there to defend Ryan's fragile ego, I guess.
I'm just saying, look, I mean, this is something that we've been we've talked about it personally a couple of times. I don't think we've talked about it on the show, but there are many different kinds of atheists.
Sure.
There are atheists that are all, like, up their own ass.
And then there's everybody else. Right?
Then there's everyone else. But even beyond that, I would like to point out the fact that if you go to the Montreal Atheist Convention website, I don't know what it is. Google it. It's the first thing that shows up.
It's actually going to be a link I'm going to put on the site that will help if people want to sign up and buy tickets for it. It'll actually be on the site. I'm promoting it hard because I'm just going to be there. It would be dumb not to.
It would be.
It would be stupid.
We're there doing a podcast, a live podcast. We are the live podcast for it. And I'm just saying that there's going to be a lot of academia there to see the other academia. And we are the idiots of the convention.
Is this what you're worried about?
I'm not worried about it. I'm just making a point. Is that we're going to go out there and we're going to do our fart jokes. And
you don't know how it's going to be received, right?
I just don't.
Okay. Well, I think you're worrying for no reason. I think it'll be fine. The website you can go check out, by the way, the link, atheistalliance.org. They have an ad that's there. You can click on it. It's basically being hosted by a local atheist group. And this is one of the things that I found out, and this is something I think most people who listen to the interview are going to love, is that the Atheist Alliance International is an organization that helps small atheist groups set themselves up. Mm-hmm. So if you're listening, and I know there's fucking people listening saying, like, I want to be more involved, but do not know how. Ta-da. And I talked to the Mr. President Man, who informed me of all kinds of really neat things that I know you'll love. So you'll enjoy my interview later on with Mr. President Man.
This is like a crazy doubleheader.
Not
only do people get a mailbag, they get an interview as well.
Well, the cool
you gotta watch out or they'll expect that every episode.
Here's the deal. The mailbag episodes always have the most listens, so I figured if we were going to talk about and try to promote a conference happening, you do it on the one where everybody's listening, because it's like that ego thing, right? People ask questions and they want to hear themselves getting answered partially.
Or maybe they just trust, you know, a whole bunch of questions rather than us prattling on for too long about one or two topics.
One or the two. I like better my interpretation, even though mathematically it's totally wrong. And yours is probably the right one. Speaking of that, let's just jump right into this sucker.
Let's get it rolling.
Let's do it.
I'm reading again, for you are incapable of reading.
Really, I'm trying to deal with that, sir, but I don't know how to. Apparently my brain reads faster than my math talks. So I get, like, all fucked up.
Okay.
That's my excuse.
I like it.
Not that I'm an idiot.
It's good. Go. It's good. It's good.
Shut up and read.
It's a good excuse for why you can't read.
Just shut up.
Okay. Leodvicus asks, now that God was on your show, is there a way you could interview Muhammad?
Yes, I could interview him if I...
if you could figure out a way to do the accent non-racistly.
Yeah, that's a pretty big one. I mean, I don't really know how to not sound Indian, actually, which wouldn't even make any sense.
Yeah.
So, I can pull off some accents, but I'd have to go back and listen. And I'm pretty sure it'll come off sounding really vulgar. So, we'll do it. Just give me some time.
Just let him figure out the appropriately, moderately offensive accent, and then he'll give it a shot.
Yeah. It takes me like a couple months to figure that out.
We'll add some of that crazy sitar music in the background.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be all good. Yeah. It'll be great. It'll be the most tasteful thing you've ever heard on a good atheist, which is saying a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, now on to serious questions from the same guy. Is it clear that religion is going to lose the war in the end? I wonder what do you think will be the last harm religion does to society? Do you think if religious people become the minority, they would become increasingly more radical, and will the final days of religion be bloody?
Man.
I do like how he's positive about the fact that we are going to win.
He is pretty positive.
I've said it many times. I feel like we're going to. I don't think it's a sure bet by any means, because you never know what religious people will do when the writing is on the wall. What are they going to do? And I don't think it's going to be like they're just going to lay down and be okay with it.
That's a really good question, but my basic question whenever somebody asks me that is like, what is the end? Is there an end to this kind of thing? And you know what? Normally, what do we do in these kinds of situations? We defer to history. We say, well, what has historically been, what happens during times of religious turmoil, during times where religiosity is not taken as so seriously? I mean, there's fluctuations, right? You got times where there's religious revivals and times where there are religious lulls. We might just be experiencing one of those lulls, and we might be only able to exist because we're at a particular lull. And that is essentially what it looks like, where a specific segment of the population of the world is living in a society that is liberal enough in its values that it allows for people to speak in disparaging ways against religion. Historically, this has not happened. In the time that we've understood civilization, you have not been allowed to do what we're doing right now.
And we have the advantage as well that science is on our side. It's got our back. We have the facts. Every single time they said, well, God is here, God stands here, you'll find God in the answers right here, science has gone, no, it's just some photons and some physics.
Well, you know, it reminds me of kind of, there was this classic clash between a guy called Leibniz with Newton, you know, because they invented calculus at the same time, and apparently Newton was a real piece of shit.
Newton? Like,
yeah, Isaac Newton was a real asshole. It was like the worst. He would basically ruin people's reputations. Just Leibniz is a classic example, claiming that he stole the invention of calculus, because they both invented it at the same time. Newton, of course, wanting full credit rather than share it. Obviously, he kind of won, unless you're in the know, you know, kind of one of those, oh, but it wasn't really him kind of thing. It's like a Thomas Edison thing. Mm. But Thomas Edison didn't invent shit. He just stole stuff, and then he basically put his little name on it, and you believe that he invented this. It's kind of like that historical lie.
I like it. He was like the first sampler. He sampled other people's technology. he was like Eminem. He took the riff from that Led Zeppelin song and just rapped over it and was like, that's me, baby.
Well, my point is that Leibniz joked about Newtonian mechanics, because he constantly had to say, well, once in a while God's going to come in and fix some of the little issues that happen every once in a while because of how Newtonian mechanics work. You know, it's kind of like everything needs to be set into place like that. You're like it, because if you don't, it doesn't take into account the fact that there are forces that push against gravity. Because according to Newtonian mechanics, it should all crush, you know, fall onto one another. It's just all kind of collapse.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. So he was like, well, God is there. And Leibniz was like, he's like, what do you need God in your calculation? Weak sauce. You know what I mean?
It is weak sauce. It is weak sauce. Anytime anybody leans on God to fill the gaps, it's weak.
Oh, well, it's like the whole intelligent design movement. Oh, things are complicated. Ergo God. Yeah. You had to work hard for that one, huh? Did it feel like one of those brain busters at the end of it? Were you sweating? Oh, that was an all-nighter, man.
I thought about it for a long time, and my calculations equal God.
Can I see your work? No, you may not see my work. It's just that's my conclusion.
I used to hate that. Back in like grade 2 or 3 when they were teaching us division, I could do division. I just couldn't do long division. And I get the answer and the teacher would always flunk me for not writing out my work.
Yeah, but you obviously understand why she had to do that. Right?
I understand completely.
You understand that now or you understood that then?
I understood that then. I still tried to game the system to make it seem just totally like a robbery.
You can't game the system when it comes to the math. They have rules.
I did all right. 25 years later, and I am running my own co-hosting of a podcast.
Oh, yeah, we're doing great.
In your face, Miss Reed.
We're doing great. What are our finances like? I don't know how to do division. Uh-oh. And you know what? You never show your work. Ba-doom-ts. Okay, well, I want to go back to the whole question of who will win in the end.
Mm-hmm.
My thing is, I don't think there is an end. Okay, it's not like everybody's going to suddenly not believe in something. I mean, look at even the people who believe, who don't believe. That doesn't guarantee that you're not going to think about, you know, or believe in something that's utterly ludicrous or completely wrong, or that your basic tools of skepticism should say, that ain't right. It doesn't guarantee that you're going to be clear-minded. It just guarantees you're clear-minded about one thing, the non-existence of God. Clarity does not provide much beyond that. It's not a lot of clarity. So I don't actually think we are going to win because I don't think there is an end. I think it's just a struggle. And as for what religion would do if there was an end, I don't think you want to know. When religion is pushed to its fringes, you see what happens, okay? Fundamentalism is a scary word because it implies fundamental principles and fundamentalist beliefs that often clash with our view of society.
And you always got to watch out because forms of control usually don't get replaced unless there's other forms of control that replace them. So if religion goes completely out of the bay, take a look at your government and see what they're doing because they might have just basically oppressed you.
Well, I mean, I think it's... You might be right by saying that oftentimes other systems of control are spontaneously created. However, with that said, I think that we live in a time where, as long as we're able to communicate with one another fairly easily, and I think that this is what's happening through the internet. I think it kind of democratizes information and knowledge. In such a way that you're not like you are aware of a broader world, a wider world outside of your own. You can see the other options, other ideas. I think so long as you have that, I think that you can be fairly confident that fundamentalism will not take over because it is a fringe.
I do like that positiveness because I look at it, you know, the internet, Twitter, all of these other forms of communication. You say, so long as these lines are open, everybody will be able to get along. I'm like, nah. It's just going to lead to more mass hysteria. We haven't even seen a dictator born of this era of crazy interconnectedness. And you don't think it could happen? I think it could.
So you're saying a Twitter or Facebook god will appear and replace religion?
No, I'm...
Oh, sir! But you know what? We'll all be saved when they fail whale.
It's true.
Mm-hmm. Yep, those systems can collapse fairly easily. So you say, where you say mass hysteria, I can say it's just as easy to ignore them. They're not pervasive enough, I think, to create mass hysteria. Just mass annoyance.
Okay, let's move on. Tom asks, number one, what do you think about this Quran burning event? It is apparently being called off, but I would still like to know what you think. This has been going on for a while. This is one of the things that nobody really understands about it. People have been talking about the idea that the media is the accomplice in this because they're giving this douchebag in Florida all the attention he wants in order to turn this into a big thing. The truth of the matter is, this was a big deal in the Middle East before the mainstream media in America picked it up. They've been talking about this nonstop for a while now over there, and they are getting ready to freak the fuck out, you know, cartoon style.
Probably worse than the cartoon. I think he was trying to burn like 100 Qurans, so it wasn't just one. It was like a whole pile of them. or something like that. And he got, I believe his name is Terry Jones, Pastor Terry Jones. He got a call from the president, actually, urging him not to do it. I actually had a conversation with this during my interview concerning this, because I was actually, not that I wanted to see it happen, because I don't yet know what would have been the outcome, but I was very curious. Like, what the fuck was going to be the response? Because if it would have happened, I know what my response would have been. And in the aftermath of that and the crazy fighting that would have probably ensued, I would have just said, this is an example of why religions typically can't get along with one another. And this whole facade that they always put on of, like, we're peaceful and you can't have peace without us. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? Some a-hole wants to torch a bunch of books that he bought. Because let's face it, that's what's happening. He's burning his property, and now we should start global conflicts because this idiot is burning things like that? That is the core of what's happening, but that's not how it's seen. The significance of what that event is contingent on a number of ridiculous and increasingly ludicrous ideas.
Well, look, you might say that he's just burning his own property, and you boil it down to that, but the truth of the matter is, what he's doing is saying, fuck you Muslims. And number one, nothing good ever came out of a book burning, period, the end.
I agree with that on a principle. I'm like, yeah, burning a book is not a win moment. We've had many fail moments, and many of them involved book burnings.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you got me on that one. But that really wasn't what interested me about the whole thing. What did was, because this is just another example of that hilarious capitulation that is occurring in terms of how America has classically protested against things. Its view on how people should be allowed to express themselves. It's self-censoring, and I do find that kind of comical in a way, or comically tragic, you know? Where we silence people's protests for legitimate reasons which are outrageous. Which are absolutely outrageous.
Oh, it's kind of like the don't draw drawings of Muhammad because Muslims might freak out and kill people.
And that will have real consequences. And you're like, okay, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, but
because it'll have consequences. And all of a sudden you realize, but they're forcing my hand. They're making the choice for me. And that's what is so insulting about it. The choice is not yours anymore. You're like, as soon as you make it, you are literally endangering people's lives because of these ludicrous ideas that, you know, that you support. Now, with that said, if you are religious, okay, and you really kind of, and at the end of the day, you're like, this secularism is the enemy, which has been a lot of talk recently. Remember I mentioned how the former British Prime Minister Tony Blair's Faith Foundation, calling on governments to say we must eradicate this secular scourge.
Don't worry, he never accomplishes anything.
Sure he does. He boondoggles his fucking country in a war, and British people died. It's not like people went home with Band-Aids, on their faces. Oh, we were faces, I got a little hurt. No, people died because of what he did.
True.
So he's a dick. And now he's just going around saying, like, hey, we must fight against this. So there's this real world, I don't know, pressure, I guess. It exists. To
limit your freedom of speech, to watch out for offending people who will take it too far?
Right. And I think that's the part of it that really outraged me the most. Like, everybody's focusing on what the reaction will be, but it's not the fucking conversation we should be having. Again, we're never having the conversations we should be having.
Yeah, because, I mean, the way I look at it is that, as I said, basically all it is a gigantic FU towards Muslims, and I can understand why Muslims over in the Middle East would be like, what the fuck? To this gigantic wave, this tidal wave of anti-Muslim sentiment that is sweeping across America right now. I wouldn't go out and set my own country on fire and trample people and have people die. There's already been like four or five people who've died during these crazy-ass, unsafe protests that they have over in the Middle East. Obviously that's crazy, but at the same time, shit is going on, and somebody should stand up and say something. And if I was a Middle Eastern in the Middle East, I would probably say, hey, what's up with all this hate? I might even go out with a fucking sign. Well, especially considering the fact that this is a country that's invading several Muslim countries.
But think about this too, though. There is another opportunity for moderate Muslims to come forward and say, "Hey, we don't support what this is, but this doesn't speak to Christianity in general." And it's like fucking crickets out there, man. It's always the same. Is that the moderates are afraid to disagree with fundamentalists because they're afraid of them. Like everyone else is afraid of these fundamentalists. You're just like, they're crazy. They're like a powder keg that if I talk against them, they will kill me. I mean, the attacks in Great Britain, you know, like the subway attacks, were mainly Muslim targets. The fundamentalists are just as much, if not more, at war with moderates as they are with the rest of the world.
I can agree with that as well. There's a constant battle in all of these Muslim countries. If you're not Muslim enough, they'll get on your case.
I would say, look, if you really want to live and have peace in this world, this is my suggestion to the moderate Muslim world, which is hopefully the majority, but if it's not, even then, you have to do more to come out against this extremism. Okay? The overreaction with this, and it is an overreaction, let us not deny the fact that as soon as people start threatening to kill other people because of some obscure pastor in the middle of fucking nowhere who decides to do this.
Is Florida the middle of nowhere now?
Is Florida?
Yeah.
Look, Florida's a butthole, okay? Just because it's got
Miami.
Florida is a butthole.
It's America's penis. Don't call it a butthole.
Okay, fine. It's dangly, limp dick where, you know...
California is the butthole, and it's proud to be the butthole. There are some nerves
what
up there
about?
That
it's
are
not
positive.
The butthole. It's more like the taint or something. Alaska's the butthole.
The taint is the butthole.
No, the taint is the area between the butthole and the dick.
That's the chota. You're stupid. don't
taint and chota the same thing.
No.
Yeah, they're totally the same thing. I'm going to school you on this later, like I schooled you on the other.
Okay. Anyways, let's move on before this this divide tears us apart, and I have to kill you. I have to issue a fatwa on your ignorance.
Fine. Do it.
Okay. Next question from Tom again. Jake, you have talked before that you used to be into conspiracy theories. There seems to be a lot of overlap between conspiracy theory people and the end-of-time Christian rapture cults. Both groups seem really into the Bilderbergs and New World Order, and some Christian pastors saying these groups herald the coming of the Antichrist. Why such similarities?
So basically he's asking, why is there similarity between conspiracy theorists and rapture enthusiasts?
Probably because, you know, everybody loves a good conspiracy theory, even religious people.
Well, look at this. In the they actually need a new world order. They need a one government in order for prophecy to be fulfilled, specifically because Revelations deals with the Roman Empire, okay? It is a one world government when it was written, so they are very receptive to the idea of a one world government, because only in the light of a one world government can you hope for Armageddon to happen. Otherwise, prophecy is not fulfilled and nothing is going as it seems. So in order for them to say, I literally believe that the end times and Revelation speak of actual events, then what you need to understand is the historical context, which puts Rome as the enemy. I mean, remember when you were a Christian and Rome was the power and you were being burned at the stake? Who would you envisage as coming down and punishing? How about the Roman Empire? I mean, even in the first passages of Revelation, it says, this is happening soon. Okay, when it was written, this is happening really soon. So it's talking about events in the present. This is the Roman Empire crushing the Jews, you know? Ta-da! That's the explanation. So for conspiracy theorists who have, you know, a hell of a time trying to describe this world where apparently the Rothschilds or... I know there's lots of different theories about who runs the world. There's some Jews in there somewhere.
Trust me, it's the rich people.
The rich people.
I have some proof. It's the rich people.
It's the rich people that control the world secretly and so on and so forth. Even though you're just like, why would a bunch of competing rich people agree to do anything? Have you ever met these people? They kind of want to fuck each other over. No honor among thieves.
They want each other's riches.
They do. They do. It always leads to that, eh? You're just like, well, I could have a cabal, but I actually secretly want it all. But never mind that fact. Never mind also the fact that, you know, conspiracies are notoriously hard to hide, especially the bigger they get. It's just like the same moon landing conspiracy, why it's so ludicrous. You're saying, like, yes, the many tens of thousands of people that worked on going to the moon are all in league. None of them have come forward. This is perfect. That's the problem with conspiracies when they're perfect. You know they're not true. You're like, this is too perfect. Obviously, nothing is perfect.
We're way too incompetent to pull off that.
Seriously, I mean, have you met the human race for like 5 minutes? You think we're really that competent where a person had a plan? No, you just worked backwards and said a plan was formed because these events seem planned. I'm like, yeah, when you fill in the details after something happens, it sure sounds like prophecy. Here's a clue. That's what they do in the Bible. All right, they talk about events that have already happened. They work backwards from that. I mean, read the New Testament where it says that Jesus comes to Jerusalem on a donkey's ass, it says, so that prophecy could be fulfilled. Because they knew about it. That's not fulfilling prophecy when you know about it. It's lame. You're like, oh, I read it, so I did it. That made sense to me. You're like, what the fuck kind of prophecy is that? It's bullshit.
Okay, Nick Whip Dip asks, this is a Dear God question. He's not here right now, but he wanted to know why God hates women. I myself, being not a misogynistic bastard, have overcome the central problem. It's still a problem, just less of one in society. Please put my confusion to an end, he asks. Why does God hate women?
I think it the serious truth of why there's probably historically a lot of women hate is, I think, actually has to do with how men try to control their breeding rights. I actually think it's about as simple as that. Men have this fear, not entirely unjustified, that their offspring may not be their own. That fear makes them want to try to control women. And through that mere system of control, usually in my mind, generates a significant portion of the society.
It spreads itself out in all sorts of ways.
In all sorts of very interesting ways, because the one thing is, when you're trying to control someone, you got to do it in a, you know, just not in only one way. It has to be complete domination.
Don't forget, we are hardwired to be jealous cocksuckers. We can't explain it. It's just a trait, an unfortunate human trait.
Think about how bullshit this is. Not only are we genetically, you know, predisposition to jealousy, we're also more predisposition to cheat. We're assholes. Like, it's like backwards. We're jealous because we probably even refer to ourselves in terms of how much we want to fuck around, not realizing, of course, that that's not how most girls feel. That's just how you feel, and then it just clouds your judgment. So you're a prick, genetically speaking.
Okay, Aaron asks, do you think the high rate of religiosity in the U.S. is linked to its high rate of scriptural illiteracy? Or to simply put it, why is it people who seem to know so little believe so much?
I actually have a little pet theory about, you know, like this whole ignorance is bliss idea. People have this all the time. They just said, if you don't know something, you tend to not be as stressed out about it, right? You've heard of this?
Mm-hmm.
I actually think that not knowing is a huge thing that stresses people out. And when you're smart and you start to learn a lot of things, the problem is that you realize that the more and more you know, the more and more you know what you don't know. While people who are ignorant tend to not even know what they don't know. So they don't fucking give a shit.
Well, they figure they follow God and God has all the answers, so there you go.
Right, but here's the deal. I think that a certain amount of uncertainty does cause problems, and usually people who are not very educated would have a great deal of uncertainty if they didn't believe in God. God is kind of like that way that they allow themselves to be happy because they figure that they have the answers, even though they have no answers. They're essentially ignorant, but they don't know this, and so they're happy.
Let me tell you what. I mean, I'm sure everybody listening to this show has been depressed because you're smart enough to understand how bleak existence.
You know
is.
How it ends. That's the thing. If you're an atheist, you know how this fucking story ends. If you thought that it ended in you going to Magical Sky Playland, where you get to live with your family and friends forever, you know, you might have this kind of ignorance is bliss thing to it. But here's the deal, and this is, you know, I love this whole idea of a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. It's a dangerous thing in the sense that we're naturally curious animals. You need to do a lot to weed out the curiosity in someone. You know, when a kid asks you why, And at one point, you just have to say, shut the fuck up. I have no answers for you. You need to accept what I say. Now, it really depends on what stage you say that. And for some people, it's the first couple whys when they're like, because God didn't shut the fuck up. And then you realize that would have a fundamental difference in terms of their upbringing. We're naturally curious, and it has to be stamped out. And religion stamps that out early, boy. Does it, like, pretty much fresh out of the womb. Stop asking questions. It's all been figured out for thousands of years. Toe the line. And receive your community and give me your 10% of your income. And that's all I want from you.
Anything else that has been figured out since then is sinful. Don't listen.
Mm-hmm. The only thing I might require from you is young, fresh boys that I could put my dick inside of.
My goodness.
Well, what? It's what the church has done for, like, forever. Am I somehow a jerk for pointing out that child rape is endemic?
I'm still saying that it's probably a
generalization?
A lower percentage, probably lower than 50%. So
was it Sweden or
like
Norway?
That.
I wish I could remember that said that every church had been involved in at least one sex scandal. That means that its entire population had been in danger at one point or another of being raped by a priest if they were a Catholic. I ask you, sir, does that sound like one of those, oh, it happens once in a blue moon? That's what you hear about, man. It's the shit you don't hear about that you know is happening and no one wants to talk about it. You think it's pleasant? Most of the stuff that you hear, it's kind of like whenever we wonder, hey, what percentage of people write to us that listen to the show? Small percentage. Let's look at child abuse. What percentage of child abuse gets, comes to the light of day? You think most of it? I don't think so, man. Especially when you're dealing with a uber-powerful fucking Big Brother-type organization. Which, by the way, remember the question before about why are religions obsessed with New World Order? Martin Luther thought that the Pope was the fucking Antichrist because that was the One World Order. Protestantism is a result of, like, that whole conspiracy theory thing. Gotta put that out there.
Okay, Roxanne has some more questions about the Koran burning. She wants to know, the Westboro Baptist Church is going ahead with Koran burning, even after the Dove Center, I guess that's the name of that place, very ironic, called off theirs. Will their publicity stunts still get people killed? Now, one of the things that, I was showing you this, some of the rallies from September 11th, and they had a guy with a sign that said, had a picture of a toilet on the left side and a picture of it wasn't a picture, it was an actual Koran stapled to his sign or hanging from his sign, and it said toilet paper, and he was giving out pages and he was burning pages and stuff. This is where, you might have that dickface in Florida who planned to have this big burning, but there's a whole bunch of other people who just do that in their spare time, because they're just so up in that shit right now. That is where their headspace is. And you better believe, probably today, there was a whole bunch of Korans getting burnt by a general number of people across America.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the idea that just one guy is doing this and he didn't do it, so it's not happening? Come on now.
Yeah.
Seriously? We're 7 billion people on this planet. What are the odds of someone else burning some Korans? Like, pretty high. I mean, this shit's just gonna fucking happen. Alright? Until we deal with this really, like that whole elephant in the room, that conversation no one's really having, because no one wants to have it, of saying, what do you do about people that are so prone to violence? What do you do about that? What are we supposed to do when we can't even show a fucking cartoon of this guy without people getting killed? Like, what do you do? That's a serious problem. It conflicts with a lot of values that we've been pushing for the last couple decades, of saying freedom of expression is important. You are interfering with that. And, there's a pushback, blasphemy laws that we're trying to be, forced through the United Nations to try to make it a crime to say anything blasphemous. I mean, there's a pushback, bro. Back to question one. What does it look like when they lose? You're just seeing the fucking tip of that shit.
Just the tip.
Just the tip. And here's the weird irony, though. The harder we push, the harder they push back. So my question is, are you ready to deal with the shit if it really starts hitting the fan?
Hey, this is a fan mail bag, not yours. Roxanne also wants to know, the chick who wants to wear her hijab on stage at Disneyland. The job allows her to wear it backstage, but she demands to be given special treatment in breaking a rule she agreed to when she was hired. What do you think? Have you heard about this story?
No.
I read about it. Here's the deal. Chick at Disneyland, she works at one of those... you know how they have that international cavalcade of nations or whatever it's called?
Yeah, sure.
And they have a whole bunch of restaurants. She works at one of the restaurants, nothing even that crazy. And basically, she is a hostess on the floor. She's not even on stage or anything. This isn't some kind of stage production. It's not like she's in a Mickey costume and she wants Mickey to wear her hijab over that.
Yeah, yeah.
She's just a fucking basically a hostess at a restaurant. And Disneyland is saying, because of our dress code, you aren't allowed to wear a hijab. Out on the floor of this restaurant.
Good Lord. You know what? I had that conversation before. Why are we making this the hill that we die on? We look ridiculous. The real reason is I can understand from a perspective of, you know, anyone, as soon as you allow the hijab, everyone's like, oh my God, we're going to open the door to Islam and everything else. And meanwhile, we're like, the harder you push against it, and the more you make something taboo or martyr-worthy, the more you attract martyrs. It's a fucking scarf that a person puts on their head. It's part of their beliefs. I think it's dumb. I think it's even a misinterpretation of the Quran itself. But it doesn't matter. It's an even more ancient Syrian tradition that predates the Quran. But they just kept it. Maybe they liked it. Maybe they find it stylish. I actually think it's kind of hot. That's not the point. The point is it's just a stupid job. It doesn't matter if she wears it. I hate this whole, well, it's the rules.
I know.
You have this whole uniform code. Fuck you in these rules. What the fuck? You're saying, like, because it's against the rules, you can't do it? I don't like that kind of world, man, where you design the rules and then say, well, anybody who breaks it is going to be punished. Well, what about the rules? Are they fair? It doesn't sound like a fair rule if she can't wear her stupid goddamn scarf. And that's all it is. What if she had a chill? What if someone needed to wear sunglasses because they have astigmatism or they have, like, fucking, like, really sensitive irises or something? Well, you can't. It's not part of the dress code. Is that really going to be your excuse for essentially, I think, taking the wrong approach to this situation? I think it's wrong. I think it's just, I don't know, you're beating your head against the wall.
I looked up some news stuff, and I just wanted to read you guys one of the comments. The first comment from this story on USA Today.
Oh, this is going to be good.
This is going to be, oh, you're going to like this. This is what John Morgan from the US of A thinks.
US of A.
Disneyland is an American icon and needs to remain that way. I go there to get away from reality, not to be confronted with Islamic religion. It's Disneyland, not Muslim land! !
Three, man.
Three.
Like the Trinity.
The appropriate number. Not two, not four, but three.
Three, like the triune God that rules his land.
Is that considered proper English? I always wondered that. Three exclamation
proper
marks?
Proper English. What the fuck does that mean? Don't bring that lingo around here, man.
I'm just saying it's three. Three is the appropriate number for extra exclamation.
Did you not watch any of those old, you know, Schoolhouse Rock? Three is the magic number.
The magic Satan number.
A man and a lady had a little baby. Yes, they did. They had three in the family.
Sounds like some weird Chinese song to try and keep people from having that four.
It was good. It was
four is not the number.
Man, I love that old school. You know, the music they did for like learning about amendments and fucking numbers and shit. Those were awesome.
Because pop back then didn't suck, so they wrote a pop ditty, and you were like, this is funky and cool. Unlike now, where you just want to stick a knife in your ear.
No, right now what they'll do is they'll try to make it like, what's popular nowadays? Well, I believe Eminem is popular. Okay, let's make a math song using that kind of rap. I'm sure we won't look totally lame.
Oh, yeah. Jay and Hudson asked, is it just me or does it seem like more and more fundamentalist Christians in the U.S., especially the so-called religious right, are more concerned with partisan politics and its demagogues than they are with the religious ideals they claim to represent? It seems, in my experience at least, that many of them have cast aside any actual religious ideals in favor of the Republican political agenda.
So what is the question?
The question is, are religious people more infatuated with control through the Republican Party than they are with actually just their own religion?
Well, remember what I always said about like that whole pushback, right, where secularism, I think, as a movement is on the growth, but I think as a consequence what we're noticing is the religious right is, you know, doing what they're usually pretty good at, is trying to unite to push back against this type of movement. And look at Prop 8 as a perfect example. The Catholic Church and the Mormon Church working together to some degree in terms of fundraising to push Prop 8 forward. Do you understand how Catholics and Christians in general view Mormons? Like, do you have any idea how they view Mormons?
They were killing them a while ago. Years ago.
They fucking hate Mormons. I mean, they view it as a crazy Christian cult, right? And the parts of the Mormonism that they really hate, one, is Jesus living on some weird-ass fucking alien planet where he's fucking everybody. Or two, when you get married, you and your wife will go into this weird heaven where you get to be gods on this other planet and also get to start your own world where you're with your offspring and shit like that. And they're
fuck
is this?
You get a planet of your own?
No, you get a people of your own. You get to become a god and then populate the world with souls that are your fuck babies.
Do I have to share this world with other Mormons?
You get to share it with like a whole bunch of Mormon wives that you're going to have. Like, it's a polyamorous world.
I like it.
Yeah, right. They love it. That's kind of the view. That's also what makes Christians generally despise Mormons. But the thing is, what do they despise more? Mormons who are kind of pro-Jesus, or gays? Right? Or in our case, what do religious groups hate more? Each other or atheists and secularists? Well, actually, it turns out that they hate us more. And you, of course, you realize this when you look at the fact that we're the most despised minority of any other minority. If you take any poll in the United States, you're like, who do you hate the most? Bam, atheist numero uno.
Why, just in terms of religions or in everything?
In everything.
In everything?
They're more hated than gays.
Man.
You have a better chance of being elected into politics if you're gay. And there are gay politicians, but you're the least likely to win if you come out as an atheist. So you realize why, because we are despised more than our religious counterparts. Because in terms of religion, other religions, the way they view it is that they're like, well, they already believe, I just have to convert them. But these horrible non-believers in their views are like, they reject all religion. We're scary, man. We represent to them the scary confidence of saying, we don't need your stinking God. And as soon as anyone says that to any religious institution, any system of control based on the idea of God, what the fuck do you think their reaction is going to be? It's not going to be like, oh, this is cool. Yeah, we can live together. No, it's like, these people are a problem.
Well, just understand that religious people generally have this feeling that everything that is going wrong in the world today is because we aren't believing in God hard enough.
Yeah, obviously,
and
that's the problem.
They want us to come back to God, and that's one of those times where you really have to realize that it's all about control, and they just want us doing what they want us to do because they honestly believe that if we just follow their stupid crap, that the world will magically just be better because God will favor us.
Right.
Again, as opposed to hating us right now for our butt-sexing ways.
Well, the problem is, it's like that never-ending cycle of, imagine you're a church, right? And you got the whole Christian guilt thing going on for you. Are you ever going to make people not feel guilty? Because the entire reason they're showing up to your boring ass service is because they do feel guilty. It's the only reason they give you money, because they feel like pieces of shit. And that's all you do. You're like, welcome everyone. You were sinful. You were crap. But Jesus saved you. And if you're lucky, and you lick his feet, and you prostrate your ass to him, and us, then you'll go to heaven. Man, that is a fucking, that's like a crazy sale. You don't let go of that profiting idea. It's very profitable for so many reasons. You get power, you get money, you get your fresh young boys if you are into that thing, which apparently a significant number of them do like. So yeah, it's a pretty sweet ride when you're an evil, child-molesting piece of shit.
Okay, Jake Farwarden, our good friend from Australia,
that's right,
asks, in your opinion, does scientific discovery / empiricism require belief, i.e. or understanding / acceptance?
So is he saying, like, is belief in science the same thing as religious belief?
Yeah, basically.
Well, I would say that anybody who ever tells you that it's the same thing, because they're like, well, at the end of the day, you have beliefs.
I'm like,
well, let's lay down what I believe. Let's lay down the fucking evidence of what I believe. And you'll find that most of the time, and you know, if you're studious about it and you follow the precepts of science, you're going to be able to defend your beliefs a little, infinitely more than anybody who's just like, well, I just choose to believe because it is preposterous. That was one of the medieval philosophers, Tertullian. That was his interpretation. He's like, I believe in it because it is ludicrous.
Yeah, believe in God, you mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I believe in the whole, not just God, but Jesus, the resurrection, everything else like that. He's like, I believe it because it does seem impossible. What a stupid argument. But ultimately, probably the best one. I believe it because it's absurd. So it has to be true. Because who would make this up? Oh, I don't know. Anybody? Look at the history of mankind. Do we invent things? Nobody would just lie to you. Nobody lied to me about fucking Santa Claus. What do they have to gain from lying to me? How about everything? They're doing pretty good right now. You see anybody that's any powerful religious institution crying its ass off saying, things are so bad for us? It's a pretty sweet deal. I've thought about starting a religion myself, but I just don't have the heart to lie.
Oh, don't worry. We all know that you will have a cult someday.
Yeah, yeah. I'll tell you what. One day, I'm gonna put out a thing. I'm gonna let fans decide what my cult's gonna be called. How about it? Is that not fair? I'm not even gonna pick the name. You motherfuckers can. I don't want to start one, but you can pick the name.
You can name the collar. I shall snap around your neck and lock.
You will feel free.
Okay, Jake's second question: are your circle of friends as argumentative as you, or are they as submissive and constantly afraid of raising any topic in fear of inspiring a Jake rant? I ask this because I'm paranoid about this myself.
So I guess he's like an Australian me. Is that what he's saying? He's paranoid about this?
Perhaps.
So he has a similar kind of thing. He wonders, are you like that with your friends? You're my friend. You tell me.
Well, let me just say this. I don't let Jake near a lot of my friends because it's bad news.
It's true. I still have a reputation.
Yeah, it's...
it really depends on what circles I can socialize with. It's just one of those things where you do a bit of a litmus test where you figure out, do these people have any real absurd beliefs that might be destroyed?
No, it's just that everything that you talk about, you do have to be right about. So that's the key problem. Is that there are times of an evening where other people might want to be right. And you might even agree with them, but you will still disagree with them in the way that you speak to them. So that's your main problem. It doesn't really have anything to do with your atheist attitude. It's just how you are. And, you know, fortunately for you, it makes you a good radio host, I guess.
Wow, I like that end there. It sounded too much like a compliment, so he's like, I guess. Jeez.
Maybe.
So I'm contrary. That's fair.
Very much so.
But I'm not as bad as I am on the show, just in case everybody knows. I'm not quite this crazy on a daily basis. I can be nice when asked. You have been witness to this. I have shut my mouth.
You're the nicest asshole I know.
Thank you.
Okay, Easy Nuts asks, by the sound of it, you both have had a fairly easy, confident time being atheists. Hope I'm not off base. I am off base. No offense if I am off base. No offense intended.
There's an offense to saying you sound like you're really...
Well, you sound like you guys have had a very hard atheist journey. I would 100% agree with him
100%.
On that. Like my parents, it's like my mom wasn't really... My mom was scornful of religion up until like 10 years ago, and my dad couldn't give any less of a crap. And
your dad doesn't strike me as a person who really feels that strongly about many things.
Not
He's
like,
just laid back, man. Your dad is, when I think about a laid back, calm dude, I think your dad, dude.
Mm-hmm.
He's laid back and calm.
Yeah, he's pretty cool about everything, so there's no problem with that. And then Canada, it's like, no one cares. No one talks. People keep that rule up. I don't even know what, like, 90% of my friends believe. I don't know, because we don't fucking talk about it, because why would you?
It's just not something that comes up.
Exactly. So I would totally agree with his comment that we had an easy, confident time. So continuing on, share with us the most awkward time you've encountered when one or multiple religious folks really surrounded you or put you out for your non-belief, and how did you survive?
Oh, man. I tell you, I think I've fantasized about multiple religious folks trying to take me on, because I love a good fight. And, I mean, Ryan was right. I don't like to be wrong. So I don't really worry about surviving even in an environment or a room full of religious people. I invite religious people to try to convert me on a regular basis. I mean, I have talked about shows where, you know, the Jehovah Witnesses have come over. I would gladly take, anyone can come to my door and try to convert me. I love it. I'm going to have a conversation.
I worry about the day you run into like a hardcore cult that just fucking brainwashes you and takes you away to their sex compound.
Come on now. Like, what would they be offering that I would send them?
Sex compound.
I can get all the sex I want. I'm not lame anymore. I can get sex. No problem.
At a compound devoted to sex?
I don't know if I want to be at the compound. It sounds like a lot of pressure.
Yeah, typically we have these Raelians in Quebec.
Yeah.
And they have a sex compound, and they are all generally overweight and gross.
It's not a sexy sex compound. It sounds great. But I say you go if you're sexually undesirable. You can go to the sex compound.
Get your sex there.
And get your sex and whatever STD you could have ever wanted, because when sex stays at a compound, things spread pretty fast.
Especially when the leader has it.
Oh, now you just gave me horrible images. See, this is why I can't start a cult, because then I have a disease-ridden cock, and I can't deal with that.
Do you want me to tell you what the most awkward time I've ever had?
What's that?
None.
It's never happened?
That's how easy and confident my atheist path is.
I wish we had more stories.
I know, I really wish we do too. But, you know, people in past shows have been like, where do I go to get away from it all? Well, from personal experience, Canada is pretty good.
I'd be like, you want to visit?
Yeah,
come here.
Give it a
shot. You'll have an easy time.
You'll have a hard time finding religious people. And if you do, there's a good chance they won't even speak your language.
Hey, we're having an atheist convention here in Montreal for a reason, right? And there's going to be the French contingent there as well. They make up, I think, about a third of the speakers there, so it's still serviceable to the Frenchmen.
Interesting.
The Frenchies.
Okay, next question here from Easy Nuts. Did I tell you that it was Easy Nuts asking questions?
No, you didn't.
Okay, well,
I would have remembered that.
Easy Nuts with a Z also wants to know, there's a Christian Science church I pass on my way to work, which I'd like to drop in and see what they're all about sometime. Are you knowledgeable about their beliefs or dogma? If so, expand and discuss a little bit, as I don't know anything about them.
Ah, shit. It's like one of those things where I wish I knew a little bit more. All I know about the Christian Science Church is the fact that they have very strict rules when it comes to what you're supposed to do if anybody gets sick or needs medical attention, which is pray.
It's worrisome, because typically doctors would be my number one answer.
Right, exactly. There have been many people who have been followers of Christian Science that have gone to court for the death of their children. Very few of them have been prosecuted because of the way that America feels about freedom of religion. And it's like one of those things where it's a bit of a sticky wicket. I definitely don't think the freedom of religion allows you to neglect the health of someone that's in your custody. But that's a fucking hard pill to sell in a country that really takes its religion pretty seriously.
Indeed. Okay, last question, Easy Nuts. He wants to know if you have any plans to expand on the Jesus Saves line of merchandise, like Jesus at a bank using a piggy bank, or any other unique puns, or maybe other such ambiguous sacrilegious quotes.
I kind of like it. I mean, I don't... I still haven't been able to gauge the success or not success of Jesus Saves, just merely because we haven't done a lot of promotion for it yet.
It's not even on sale right now. The shirt is offline.
The store is not working, which is why there's no commercial, because there's no store right now.
Yeah, there'll be a store in another 2 or 3 days. So.
Yeah, yeah. It's just one of the things that we've come to expect of ourselves, is that we do things...
slowly and poorly.
I know. That's just who we are. I'm like... If anybody, if there are people out there that complain and say, you do this slowly or poorly, I'm like, do you want to work for nothing?
We are but two men, and we are not gods.
We're bad. We're not really awesome at what we do. I wish we were.
No, I'll tell you the truth. After spending 2 weeks working 24 hours around the clock to get up the new website for myself, I realized that I'm not bad. It's just that when you're doing everything on your own, it's hard.
It really is. It really, really is. But... as for other merchandise, I got to tell you, I kind of like the Jesus at the Bank thing, but I don't quite know what I would do with that. I think it depends on how well the Jesus Saves does, and if people really kind of
Well, one thing we're definitely going to do, regardless of how the shirt does, is we're going to do some atheist buttons. Is going to be something that's going to happen in the next 2 or 3 months. So we'll do like a set of 10 buttons, and you buy them like as a pack for like $5-6 or something like that.
Yeah, we'll determine what the price is based on how much it actually costs us to make.
Yeah, exactly. This is true. $5 probably in advance. It's like, I don't even know if that'll cost the postage. So we'll figure it out. But yeah, we're gonna look.
We're
at
working
some
on new merch. That's new merch. The definite idea. I mean, I'm going back to work full time on this pretty soon, and
yeah, you're gonna be out of your job by next month.
Hopefully
at the atheist convention you could tell everybody that you're full time again.
I really want to do that. If not, it's kind of like mostly full time. We're not bleeding anymore like we were financially. We're it's not like, hey, everything is solved, but you're like, if I button down, take this shit seriously, get her done, can make it.
If the economy does not collapse again, we'll be okay. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, well,
seriously.
If it collapses again, I'm going to walk the earth. Fuck that noise. I'm going to be fucked anyways.
Yeah, I'm going to do it like Mel Gibson in The Road Warrior with like the armor and the dog and the shotgun.
See, I'd go with you, but I know that you would betray me.
I would.
Yeah, I know. You're a bad friend.
First time there's like a foot race between me and you and some fucking wolves, I would shoot your leg and get away.
You suck.
Okay, Chocobar asks, so you've traveled back in time to 2,000-ish years ago and run into Jesus. Hey, he exists and has a bit of a following with some of his crazy ideas about peace and love. What would you say to him?
Well, here's the great thing. I mean, you realize that you could say anything to him, and it would probably not make it into the history books or even his own, or even the Bible. I mean, everybody who wrote it never even met him. So you could say whatever you wanted to him without fear of breaking the space-time continuum. So that's the good news.
Mm-hmm.
So I just decided to geek out right there and need to put that.
I know what I would say to him.
What?
I would say, keep up the good work, buddy, because compared to the Old Testament, you're the bee's knees.
Hey.
You know, I'm not gonna try and change the time continuum. I'm not gonna like shoot
I don't
him
like
around.
It. I'll tell you why. What I don't like about it is that monotheism could have just basically stayed the tiny, insignificant, worthless idea that it was when the Jews still believed in it. How many Jews are there right now in the world? It's like 12 million, right? It's not a huge religion. They don't seek to expand outside their own religion, and I have respect for that. But the whole Christian idea gets basically, when it gets taken over by St. Paul, who takes Christianity is like, I will reach out to the Gentiles, I will reach out to non-Jews to spread the gospel, then you get what you get now, and it sucks.
But you're looking at it from this weird idea that Christianity is some revolutionary new idea when it's just an offshoot of Judaism.
But right, Judaism as it stuck the way that it was,
so there wouldn't there
no spread. And without Christianity, then you don't have,
you know,
Islam. There's just, the list goes on.
Look, there's a whole bunch of offshoots that happened. The only reason Christianity got where it got was because the Roman Emperor decided, hey, this seems pretty cool, and he got on board. And that's basically where it started. So
yeah,
it
but
could, it could have been anything.
What you don't understand is at the same time,
he could have been all about, hey, I'm going to go on to this other Judaism 2.0 where we all are like that.
And you want to
know
why
everybody would be going around
wrong?
With fucking with curly hair on the side
no,
of their heads
wouldn't.
With dreidels.
No. You know what they would have done? They would have done the same thing that they had done for fucking hundreds of years before that, which was to have basically, hey, there's a freedom of religion, you can believe in whatever you want, and it's no big deal. Polytheism is not a violent idea. The problem is, as soon as monotheism became the official religion of the state, then it became a hammer, a fucking hammer to ensure control. Because look, by that time, the Roman Empire, which is collapsing and basically becomes just merely a city-state, evolves into into the church, right? This is what it changed into. It went from one system of control to the other. It would not have been able to do this had it been a polytheistic idea that didn't, from the get-go, say, this is the one true religion. That's the problem with it. It's like a bad idea, man, and it propagated itself. And then you saw a whole bunch of fucking copyright offshoots. And that's what you get with Islam. You get this fucking double whammy of bullshit. Why? Because everybody had to latch on this idea that there is only one God, and if you don't believe in him, you're going to fucking die. And that's the new, that was the revolutionary idea of the Jews. And if it would have stayed within Judaism, it would have stayed just a fucking little tribe that nobody gives a shit about, and it would have been fine. But no, instead we have, like, centuries of war, religious conflict, the killing of heretics,
heretics?
Sectarian, yeah, people who don't necessarily follow one specific dogma.
Isn't that,
that's a heretic.
Heretic,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Heretic. Just atrocities. So I'd be like, hey, peacenik dude, if that's how you are, but you're probably not, shut the fuck up now. Shut up. That's what I would say. I would say shut up. Shut the fuck up.
Nice. Okay, Lunchbox 11,000 asks, and this is one of those interesting crossover questions between Ultimate Fighting, which I do on my blog and Jake helps me with, and it's one of those fun crossover questions.
I know, we always
so who got off easier, Jesus being crucified or Vladimir Matyushenko being crucified by John Bones Jones, who is a fighter that everybody out there, if you care about Ultimate Fighting, you should know about him. I'll answer that just quickly. Matyushenko didn't get even close to an ounce of what Jesus got. Jesus went for a while. Jesus was like in like a 15-round championship fight, and it killed him.
Well, the thing you have to understand is that for the most part, what people associate with the last little trials and getting suffered and that kind of thing, it's based on medieval passion plays, right? Kind of like Passion of the Christ is a 2-hour snuff film. Well, they used to do these things all the time in like live-action plays, right? Like that was a pretty important thing they did. For them, the passion was a way for people to empathize with the suffering of the main hero in order to be able to empathize with what he's trying to give you. Like, oh, look how much he got beat the shit out of because he loves you. And when you see that, it kind of gives you a visceral experience. And you're like, wow, he's getting his ass kicked. Oh my God, he loves me so much. And you realize, hey, Jesus had a bad weekend. What about all those people that are fucking slowly dying and it's taken them months and have suffered way more than that 2,000-year-old Jew? Does their sacrifice mean more?
I'll tell you something ironic. There are definitely people in Guantanamo who have suffered more than Jesus. So think about that for a while.
How much did that number two of Al-Qaeda get waterboarded? Like 180 times or something? Wow.
Three times is enough to like break most people.
Well, there was this one guy, this conservative radio talk show. I think his name is Mad Cow or something like something Cow.
Cow?
That's
his internet persona.
Yeah, well, that's his radio name. It doesn't matter. Anyways, he at first was all like, waterboarding's fine. Then he basically went to go and
get waterboarded.
Get waterboarded. He lasted about 10 seconds. And then he's like, that was the most scared I've ever been in my life. So he lasted 10 seconds.
Yeah, well, most people are like, hey, what's the way you would least like to die? And most people say drowning. And guess what? Waterboarding is like drowning that never ends. It really is.
For 180 times.
180 times.
Sounds like fucking fun.
Okay, VJ Killshore asks, why is there much disparity in your just world? Like, why some people are poor, some are rich, and some are super rich? Is there some higher meaning to it? I think this might be an Ask God question.
Oh, yeah. It is an Ask God question. Jesus. You got to fucking figure it out, everybody. Mailbag. Ask God. Mailbag. Ask God. We're gonna run through this a few times if you guys don't get it.
Two separate things.
Two separate things. I know that they're similar because you're asking questions. But please, folks.
But God is not here right
God
now.
God is not here. He's not present. He's out. He went
God's
away.
God's gone. God's gone away.
Don't do any Fight Club fucking quoting on this show. All right, let's keep going. You can, VJ, you can ask that question again for...
when God's around. Because, yeah, I mean, who are we to answer that question?
No, I can't answer that question.
We couldn't answer the pin question either. Next time we get God on, we'll ask him how many angels fit on a pin.
There you go.
Okay, Hank asks, hello from another Montreal A's. Hey, we got another Montreal A's guy here.
Hopefully he'll come to the damn conference on October 1st, or else I know your first name, and I'm going to hunt you down. For not coming.
He asks, do you have any clever lines/comebacks that you proudly used or died or are dying to use someday?
I'm assuming you probably don't have any clever one-liner comebacks.
Because I just usually smile and nod. I'm not, I mean, you are the bombastic, in your face, talk to Jehovah Witness, try to convert him. I'm literally, I just kind of smile, my little smile, nod my head. and you know, have a beer and chill out and relax. So no, I have nothing interesting.
I don't know if I have clever lines per se. There's just certain things I just love to do. Like there was this one time one of the Jehovah's Witnesses came over, and I asked him the question of why did he believe in God, and he answered, "Well, I believe in God because I've read the Bible and I believe what the Bible tells me." And my favorite thing to ask him, saying like, "Well, you do admit that there was a time before the Bible existed, right? You do accept the fact that the Bible was younger than mankind." And he's like, "Okay, I can accept that." I didn't want to go into details about how much time. It didn't matter. I said, "There was a time where man was around and there was no Bible." He says, "Yes." I said, "Given that situation, would you have believed in God?" So he's kind of struggled a little bit, and then he just sort of like came up with the, "Well, you know, I would have looked at nature and I would have guessed that maybe there was something," and I'm like, "But you don't have any knowledge or information regarding that. So your guess or what you try to assume is the reason why something exists, you wouldn't even have a Bible to tell you that there was a God. So you wouldn't even probably believe in it." And I'm like, "How can you differentiate that from just the basic atheism that every child, every baby is born with? They have no knowledge of this. You're born an atheist, man." And definitely there were people that lived in a time where there was no Bible. He was it was a problem. It was such a problem that he kind of ignored the question and went back to, "Well, in the Bible," it's my favorite line. As soon as you sort of like confuse someone and then just get like, "No, I don't know how to answer this."
It's not a bad one, but it's not the kind of one you're going to defeat anybody on, because it's past the scope that they're even really able to understand their own ponage. You know what I mean? It's like they just got pwned. They don't even know it.
Well,
because
they can't do it for some kind of, "Oh, I'm going to tell them the ultimate question." They're going to just say, "Oh my goodness, there is no God." You're not going to get that moment. I've never experienced that moment. I've had a lot of these conversations.
Oh, just because you haven't witnessed it, it does not exist.
No, because every single person that I've ever talked to that has been a believer and is no longer a believer will tell you that it was never one conversation. It was just a series of conversation. Sometimes people just think that they don't even believe, but they don't realize that the reason, like, they'll think that there's something wrong with them for not believing. They're like, "Well, everybody else believes, so why don't I believe?" And you're just like, "Well, dude, no, there's nothing wrong with you." It turns out that everyone else is retarded.
Okay, Rebo asks, "Are Jews actually considered a race?"
I do believe they consider themselves a race.
Well, anytime you segregate yourself from the general gene pool as much as Jewish people generally do,
still within that time it would like be, it'd be like saying, "Well, are dog different races?" And you would just say, "Well, they're different breeds."
Well, this is a controversial way to answer this question.
Why?
Look at it like dogs. Do you consider a Jew any different from a mongrel?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was saying. You're an idiot. You're a fucking moron. No, what I was saying is that you could look at a lot of different dog breeds, and you would think, "Oh my goodness, these must be different races, right? They look so different from one another. One will be tall, the other one will be tiny." And really, they're not. They're still the same species, and that's us. It doesn't mean, however, that uneducated individuals can still pretend that because they might even look different, that they would be considered race. I think the greatest, the most hilarious thing is if you really did consider them a race, the kind of same way that we might say, say African American
or French Canadians,
or French Canadian would be a race, then the Jews would be no different in terms of race of Palestinians. That'd be exactly the same. It's like, share the same lineage and come from the same place. You're the same people.
I do appreciate the Jewish race. I do. Like the chicks, curly hair and big nose. I love it. I love it. And they're, I don't know what it is, they're generally pretty smart too. I love it.
You like Jewish chicks?
I love Jewish chicks.
All right. Well, you know, if there's any, we'll call them secular Jew chicks out there.
There's tons.
With some curly hairs.
There's a whole sub-segment of Jewish people who are just like, God is obviously stupid, but, you know, being Jewish is really important to them still. And I'm down with that.
Yeah, whatever. You want to look at kind of the traditions of your ancestors? I got no problem with it. I'm sure that there are plenty. What I'm saying is that if you're one of these secular Jews that has the curly hair that Ryan is so keen on, remember, we have that offer that if you want bonus shows, you can send Ryan your boobs, and if he judges them adequately, you will get free membership.
They don't even have to be bare. They can be clothed. They can be
cloth.
I refer to it in his judgment. He tells me thumbs up or thumbs down, and I'm going to hand out those memberships. So it is up to Ryan. So you can have that conversation with him. But this is the offer I'm putting out there.
And this is open to non-Jews as well. Okay, Luke asked, will the site redesign include a form, please?
Yes, the new site will feature form.
Honestly, I can't even get him to shut up about the form. He's like, form this, form that. He's got big form plans.
I do have big form plans. So I'm expecting everybody that was talking a lot about it and saying, I want one, I better see you there posting like crazy, because we're going to have to make sure once we do put it up that it doesn't die. Because that's the thing whenever you put
nothing,
up a form.
There is nothing sadder than a form where no one posts. Like once a week maybe, somebody like, hey, what's up? Crickets.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was waiting for a long time. Partly, one was to get enough traffic to make even this idea feasible or wise. But once, even now with the numbers, it's still a bit of a risk that there might just be forms that die. So I'm going to count on you guys to fuck that bitch. Do it awesome.
Okay, Happy Heretic asks, how do you respond to the criticism that if you're an atheist, then you don't really love your wife or kids? As one Catholic put it to me, it's not love at all, but a biological gene that causes you to favor one person over another. You really don't love your wife or children, but are compelled to favor them as to propel your genetic heritage forward. To suggest that it's something more is not based on scientific evidence, and therefore is dubious indeed. You should no more believe in love than the spaghetti monster under your bed. We are globs of cells and nothing more. That is why we have feelings, and it is merely evolutionary devices that give us this advantage over others who feel less. But be careful. Love responses cause people to do irrational things like lay down a cross for others.
Like lay down on a cross for others.
Oh.
So she's like, personally, she says this Catholic is, or Happy Heretic, excuse me, says that this Catholic is stupid, but how to explain to him that in a little more sophisticated way. I'm actually saying that's a pretty sophisticated way of looking at what love is.
A pretty sophisticated answer for a Catholic to tell you, and I'm like, you're 99% right, but
what the fuck is up with that last statement, idiot?
What are you saying? The idea that if you don't believe in God, or if you don't, unless you believe in God, then you don't get the real feeling of love? I'm like, it's the same whether or not you believe or you don't. And there's nothing false or ridiculous about these beliefs, even though they do boil down to just chemicals going in your brain.
Yeah, why does that... I never understood how people were like, oh my goodness, by explaining it that way, you take away what is awesome. I'm like, you make it awesome. The fact that this is possible due to natural laws, due to chemicals interacting with one another, that you get something like love, and somebody who would be unimpressed by that.
Even
what the fuck, man?
No matter how much shit we eat, you could sit around eating Doritos and Krispy Kremes and
which you do.
And McDonald's, trust me, yeah, every day of the week, 4 weeks a fucking month, 12 months a year, and somehow your brain will still produce the complex fucking chemicals needed for you to feel this entire range of emotions. That's amazing.
It's true. I mean, you feed yourself with bullshit food and you will still go.
You get the full range, baby.
Yep.
The full range.
Although I'll tell you one thing, though. If you do put shitty food in your system, don't be surprised when the reactions are
slow. Oh, no, seriously.
Slow.
I do agree with you there. Trust me. Anybody who doubts this, give your kid... who I assume that you're feeding well because, hey, you're a responsible parent, give your kid something crappy and watch them turn into an angry dick face. If you have a dick face kid, man, dick face kids always scare me. If you have a dick face kid, feed them better, because the better the fuel you put into them, the better they're going to operate.
Well, I do want to put this out there that kids are like people and sometimes they're just dicks.
It's true. Okay, Sean asks, who confuses you more? Pick any of the religions.
You know what confuses me the most, actually? The success of Scientology. It does confuse me.
I've been seeing ads lately on the internet. Basically, here's how the ad goes. It's one of those, like, flash ads. So it'll come up, it'll be like a black screen, and then it'll be like shit flying at you and exploding, kind of like they're advertising Clash of the Titans. They'll be like, are you confused? Lonely? Do you not know what to do? Scientology has the answer. And I'm like,
I can understand that for anybody that's in a tough spot and they don't have any answers, and they're looking for answers, and they've looked to science, and maybe science has some answers, but they're not useful answers. They definitely don't help them in any way that's practical on a day-to-day basis, at least. Why would you not turn to a stupid culty religion that at the very least has, at any given time, a certain number of people who seem to be happy?
I don't know. One, because the whole process of Scientology is kind of scary. And I mean that, I mean, look, you walk into a church, any old church off the street, and for the most part, you can just sit there, you can just listen, and no one's going to really bother you. You can be left alone. I mean, there's plenty of those kinds of people. You walk into a church of Scientology, and the first thing they want to do is they want to audit you. They want to ask incredibly personal questions about you.
They want to spend hours with you talking about you. Where is somebody going to get something like that without having to pay money for it?
That's true. And these are the same people that distrust psychiatrists deeply. So maybe that really is the key. We'll listen to your problems. We will record everything and keep data on you. But you'll feel better just telling us about them, too. That's going to be your reward.
Just talking is the best. Just not the dirty-ass psychiatrist. I was first going to say the Japanese.
Shintoism kind of is?
Yeah, whatever the hell they believe. I don't understand it whatsoever. I've tried. I've looked into it. I've spent some time. It just makes no sense to me whatsoever.
I think it just requires hundreds and thousands of years of worth of culture to absorb that you're not willing to do.
It's true. But I decided that I was going to pick Catholicism because if you're going to take a religion that's been around for so long that their shit obviously stinks and that they're obviously full of crap, then no better religion than that. They've had a couple thousand years of established oligarchy where they make all sorts of crazy rules that are obviously bullshit, and yet people still swallow it all and they're still complete sheep to it. So that would be the number one to me.
I'm never surprised, though, when the big dog in town maintains power. It's like, hey, why is Daddy Warbucks rich? I don't know. He's a profiteering piece of shit, and he will continue to be so. That's why he's called Warbucks. Guy adopts a fucking orphan and thinks that he's made good on the blood on his hands.
Is this like a Little Orphan Annie reference?
Yeah, Daddy Warbucks. His whole name comes from the fact that he's a war profiteer.
He was a profiteer?
Yeah.
Wasn't he just a good war dude?
No.
No?
No.
For sure, he was an evil dude.
It's in his name!
But I thought he was the good guy that rescued her from, or was he the bad dude?
Well, he's not.
Is he the bald guy? That
Annie's
always hugging.
Yeah, and softens his heart and turns him. You know.
Okay, so
he's an
evil
war prophet.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
I was not aware. Thank you for that Annie education, right there.
Well, you're welcome. It changes the movie a little bit, doesn't it?
Anybody under 20 years old is like, what the fuck are they talking about?
The internet. You think these kids nowadays with their cell phones and their Jell-O pudding, they don't go on to the Googles and figure it all out? Right, exactly.
Okay, anyways. Brennan asks, we got two more questions to go. Brennan asks, I would appreciate a debate between dogmatic/religious figures posting questions to one another with either Jacob Ryan or Jeff mediating between the participants using possible featured questions, suggestions, Jesus, God, Muhammad, Allah, Lord, Zeno, Santa Claus, Easter Bunny, etc.
So this is a kind of a
interfaith summit.
So this is not so much of a question, but being like, can you fucking do this?
I don't think we could. You know what? Maybe
can I pull this off?
If this atheist thing goes well, who knows where it'll go, you know? We're kind of hoping that we will be able to pull this off to the point that somebody will say, hey, would you guys like to come to something that isn't 5 minutes from your house? And then we'd be very happy to do something like that.
Well, we're still experimenting with a whole bunch of show formats and stuff like that. I mean, the mailbag was a bit of an experiment, the Ask God, which people like, the funny Bible quotes. There's going to be a couple other things that we're going to try out. And the honest truth is that we're going to try a bunch of these out. We're going to let you vote, and you people are going to choose.
And as we have more time and money, we'll be able to do more cool things. I mean, that's always the thing that I have to remember is, like, there's other, you know, you see other people out there doing cool things, and you're like, they have fucking money.
It's like, what would you do with money? You're like, I would do cool things. Well, it begins there. Phase two is figuring out what the fuck those cool things are.
Okay, Raiden asks, do you guys believe in ghosts?
I don't think I'd be a self-respecting skeptic and atheist if I did believe in ghosts, but there was a time where I did, and I did think myself to be those things.
I owe my brother $100 because when I was like 10, I told him I was going to be a Ghostbuster.
Why do you owe him $10?
No,
because you said that if you weren't, you would give him $10.
Yeah, we made a bet. I was like, I'm going to be a Ghostbuster when I grow up. You know, like, I bet you $100 you weren't. And he was like, you're like an anti-Ghostbuster. I'm like, to a certain degree, an atheist podcast is kind of like being a Ghostbuster in a weird way.
You're busting ghost myths? Are you really just trying to avoid paying $100?
Yeah, pretty much. He's not. He knows we're broke. He's not planning on collecting any.
Well, he bought you a nice chair.
I know. My last chair was so full of farts. It was a poltergeist of its own, my friend. You'd sit down on it and you'd be like, oh,
that is disgusting. What the hell is wrong with you? Why are you sharing this? A couple of minutes ago, we were asking girls to send pictures of their boobs, and now you're saying you have a disgusting fart chair. Huh? You're not doing yourself any favors. That's the last impression. That's the last question. And you said you had a fart chair.
I'm sorry. I fart. I admit it. It's horrible.
In a chair that is apparently disgusting of it.
Look, dude, I sit in my chair 10 to 12 hours a day. I sat in that chair for 5 years. Yes. It is full of nastiness, like anything anybody uses for that long would be.
First of all, it wasn't 5 years. It was less than that. Because I actually owned that chair that I gave.
Well, there we go.
And who knows how long that chair had been in use.
How long you'd been farting into it?
I actually didn't sit in the thing. I thought it was atrociously uncomfortable. The person who sat in it was a person who I used to live with, this guy called Mark. He was like this really fat, sweaty dude.
Well, great.
And he owned that chair. And because he owed me many thousands of dollars when he disappeared, I kept the chair. And that's what you sat in.
Well, great. Well, I'll just say this. The chair only started getting nasty when it got really humid. So I don't even really blame my own biological whatever. It's just, you know, I smelt what I smelt. And I was like, that's fart and badness and awfulness. And anyways.
I'm really glad that that's how we're ending the segment. Is there any way to salvage any type of sexiness, or is it doomed?
I don't believe in ghosts.
That is sexy. I'll tell you what, if that's not worth some boobs for a free podcast, I don't know what it is.
I'm all good. there's a lot. Trust me, I can use the Google and I can find some boobs too.
I know, but there's always
use
something
the Google
about
to
personal...
find the boobs and the poontang.
I know, but like I said, there's something about personal just for you boobs that is a pretty magical thing when you realize that no one else is seeing them. It's your boobs, and that's a good feeling.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know what? We're gonna let you go.
Well, we're not letting people go. We got a break. We're rolling right into an interview now.
That's right. We're rolling right into the interview.
So there's no goodbyes.
There is a goodbye. Goodbye for now.
Goodbye from me.
Yes, that's right. You're not in the interview. So shut the fuck up, Ryan. We'll see you all for the. Are we doing a bonus show before you're gone? Because you're gonna be gone for like two weeks. Remember how I said that you're always gone? Everybody knows this. Ryan leaves all the time. So within those 2 weeks, I'm going to be trying to harangue Jeff, but I will also be trying to do more interviews.
We'll probably be doing a Skype show as well.
I got proof that I'm doing more interviews. Here comes an interview, bitches.
All right, welcome back, folks. It is interview time today. My interviewee is president of Atheist Alliance International, Mr. Stuart Beckman. I'd like to thank him for taking the time to sit down with nobody and answer his inane questions.
This is Stuart.
Hey, Stuart. All right. You know, it's funny. I was looking at your picture on your Skype account, and I swear to you, I don't know if it's just this picture, and you can tell me if anyone's ever said this, but you look almost exactly like Sean Astin. You know, from The Lord of the Rings? Like the Sam? You look like Sam in your photo. Do you actually look a bit like him, or is it just a coincidence?
No one's ever said that before.
Nope.
I know
maybe
who Sean Astin is. I wouldn't think of myself that way. But.
No. Okay. Well, I mean, I'm just putting it out there. I have only ever seen one photo. It is a tiny, tiny little photo on Skype.
Yeah.
And that was the first thing I thought. I'm like, oh my God, I'm talking to Sam. Sam's gonna from The Lord of the Rings. You look
okay, I can see I'm going to have to change that photo. Okay.
Here's one thing. Tell me a little bit about, and I know that people are going to be curious about this. I was reading the mandate of your organization, And it stated that one of the things, one of your aims, is to be able to help people who are trying to set up their own atheist organization. So what is it that you do? Are you, like, guiding people into this? Like, if I have a fan. He's in New Orleans. He's been trying to organize, like, atheist picnics and atheist events and those kinds of things. He's been surprisingly proactive. He keeps trying to say, hey, thanks for helping me do this. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? I didn't do anything. But he's trying to do this. Do you, like, should he approach you guys and say, hey, can you help out or can you give me advice?
Yeah, he probably should approach us because that, as you noticed, is one of the primary missions of Atheist Alliance International, is to provide support and guidance for those who want to create a community in their area. And we do that through providing seed money. We do that through providing speakers to come out and talk to the group. We can provide leadership training for a group of people who, you know, are ready to get together or ready to expand their group and not sure what to do next. Places like, like Africa, we provide computers so the group can have a website and go online and find other people that way. So that's a pretty important part of our mission. And anybody who does want to form a local atheist group in their area is not sure how to go about that or the best way to do it. We do have tools and techniques that we make available to anybody who's interested in doing so.
So let me play devil's advocate for like 5 seconds. And I've heard this, I'm sure you've heard this multiple times. A person says, well, I don't feel comfortable organizing or creating communities because that's what religions do. And this is not a religion. So what is your, like, you must have one of those pre-recorded statements that you say to people like that. How do you respond?
Well, I respond in a couple actually ways. I have a couple canned responses, I guess. One is that, you look at the evolution of human beings, and we are social animals. And just because you don't find a community within a religious group doesn't mean you don't generally, as a human being, look for community. There are lots of non-religious communities out there. Joining your local sports club or
the Red Cross, yes.
Right, or Rotary Club or something like that. I mean, that's just what people do, is they find groups to hang out with and share ideas with. That's part of our experience and part of what we crave in our evolution. So if you tie any kind of group affiliation to being a religious thing, well, yeah, you need to work on that probably and get over that. But once you do, you'll probably see the value of having groups outside the religious realm. And that's when I think if seeing the distinction here of a basis for raising your family and for moral discussions and looking at how does one deal with the world from a world base of reason instead of from superstition or tradition or authority, then that's probably the point when you should look at atheist groups and see, does this provide some fill some part of your life that maybe you don't feel is being very fulfilled right now.
I think, I liked what you said before about saying that there are other groups that establish themselves that aren't necessarily based on religion, because I feel like to some degree the blanket response being, well, that's what religions do, and we're not a religion, we're not even a belief, which is true. I mean, atheism is the lack of a belief. And I think that maybe in some degree, like, we haven't yet agreed on, I don't want to say not a word for non-belief, because we do have a word for that, but the consequence of non-belief. You know, you can say, well, I'm an atheist, and that wouldn't necessarily matter in a world where there are no other religions, but when you deny the beliefs of others, all of a sudden that does impose something. Even though I feel like the hilarious part about all this, you know, with religious people accusing us of being somehow like them, which is weird because they always say it in a negative context, but they say, oh, well,
is it like that's a bad thing?
No, it's like the greatest irony. Why are you even using this as an argument? That's what I always try to bring back. But what were you saying?
I just saw an article about some religion. It was probably connected to the Quran burning. I was reading articles from different faith-based people, and they were talking about how they are calling their followers to rise up against the secular one-world government that we are obviously trying to promote. And every time I see that, I go, well, isn't that what the whole mission of Jesus is about?
Yeah, except for replace secular with sectarianism.
Yeah, yeah. But not that I'm saying we are looking for a one-world secular government, but still, just the arguments, it's almost like Karl Rove. You look for the strength on the other side, and you attack that the most.
Well, look at the there was an article that came out recently. The Jehovah Witness put this thing up saying, "Are atheists on the march? They dare go to people's houses and try to tell
them." Yes, I saw that article. Outrageous from not just any Christian, but from the Jehovah's Witnesses. Who
do you think you are?
Who has the bigger mote in their eye to take out first?
Well, I tell you, one of the things that I enjoy doing. This is one of my personal pleasures. I always love having Jehovah's Witnesses come over and just try to sell me on their religion. But that was really, when I read this, it was just one of those, why are you accusing me of the very thing that you say is the most positive thing about what you do?
And I think what the success of religious groups is based on is taking what we do as human beings, what's important to us community-wise, and putting the religious stamp on it and saying it's really religious. And a lot of secularists and would-be atheists look at that, and if they buy into it, they go, oh, well, getting together, oh, that's a religious thing, so I don't want that. Oh, they deal with morality. Well, I don't. That's religious, so if morality is religious, then I'm going to be amoral. If getting married or having kids is a religious thing, then maybe that's not for me. When in fact, you have been bamboozled by the biggest scam in the world, is that they have been able to attach their brand to what otherwise would be a very generic and valuable human experience.
Well, I think I have a little pet theory that I think I've thrown around quite a few radio shows. I've said that we have to stop looking at cults as a thing, you know, like that you are, that you aren't. I view cults as a degree. Everything has maybe, or things have cultish tendencies. The same way that Star Trek has a cultish tendency. Things about it that people identify with. A kind of liturgy, a kind of, like a shared common, almost dogma, if you will, in terms of these movements. The problem lies in maybe some parts of the new atheism, which is what we would agree we can call it, like the movement of trying to organize rather than just merely deny the existence of God, saying like, yeah, let's get together and try to do something about that. I think maybe it has some of those elements. The same way that anytime anybody ever organizes themselves, they will have cultish elements. I think the problem is as soon as we smell even like that, a slight commonality with those, we instantly feel repulsed because we're like, well, we have to be careful. We're going to turn ourselves into a religion. But I think, and this is maybe you agree or you disagree, I think the real difference between, say, atheism as a movement, as a sharing some of those cultish tendencies, is the fact that there really is no dogma. I think that's what the interesting thing is. When we meet and when people talk, I've encountered atheists with different, entirely different beliefs, people that always call me some kind of communist or something like that because they're socially, you know, like they're economically conservative. We don't probably share a lot of beliefs. It is only in our disbeliefs that we share commonalities, and I think that's kind of like the thing that prevents the strong degree of cultishness, the non-shared dogma, which I think exonerates us from, you know, being even associated with those ideas.
I think there's a willingness and, well, maybe even a demand for diversity in our community that a lot of religious groups can't deal well with. I'm not sure all of our groups deal all that well with it either, but in general, I'd say you're right. I'd say because we are diverse in so many other areas, we are probably the most anti-conformist community in the United States, and if not the world.
Yeah, it's true. We're all a bunch of hard-nosed curmudgeons. Trust me, I know. I have fans that are atheists. They will nail your ass to the wall when you get something wrong, won't they?
Oh, yeah, and there's so many of us that just love to be on that other side of the fence. You go in a lot of religious communities, and they really value the conformity that you think the same way your your neighbor, your friend thinks. It seems to be in a lot of atheist circles almost the opposite. I'm going to look for a position that is as far opposite from you as possible, and I'd be proud of it.
Yeah, I definitely would say that in terms of, like, to please an audience, it would be easier to please an audience of religious people because you just have to say something that you know everyone agrees with. With atheism, you're like, no one agrees with on everything except for what we
don't
believe.
Yeah, you're
going
to have to defend every word along the way.
Well, maybe that's also part, and this is something I wanted to ask you. Do you think that there's this tendency for us to, I don't want to say eat ourselves, but to kind of almost be too self-critical? Like, I'm thinking in particular the amount of, I'm sure you remember this, there's a huge amount of debate and talk that happened when Phil Plait gave his Don't Be a Dick speech at the Amazing Meeting. There was a huge division there in terms of people agreeing with him and people disagreeing with him. Do you think that we have this tendency to almost be overly critical of ourselves, or what do you think that comes from?
Yeah, probably so, and I would say that comes from if you are going to be a skeptic in our society, especially a religious skeptic, I think there tends to be a requirement that you have to have a bit more than the average fortitude to survive out there. It's really hard to say, I'm not going to be joining the pack. I'm going to hold my own opinion because I think it's right, even though 99% of the rest of the world around me doesn't believe it. I think that's a pretty rare and courageous individual that can take that stance. And so I think we tend to be a collection of those rare and courageous individuals who are not afraid to hold on to our own stance until proven otherwise. And that probably comes across a bit as perhaps more skeptical than is good for us sometimes.
Well, I guess that in a way, the thing about any – like a movement where it's based on no dogma is that there's obviously no central – leadership. I mean, even your organization doesn't try to say we're the leaders in everything. You're just saying we're going to give you the tools that you need and you can just go off and spread godlessness.
Yeah, certainly in our community, we're going to find a lot of people who are extremely adverse to any grouping around a personality. I was going to say any cult-like organization, but just any kind of personality-driven organization where it tends to be one person, and that's so much of the religious movement, that you get a charismatic individual, and that's the whole church. I can't imagine in the current day here, I think there have been in the past, but in the current day, I can't imagine in our community anybody really filling that kind of role in a leadership thing. It's just not possible.
Well, I would put... say in terms of reputation or gravitas, probably the four horsemen, just in terms of the power of their work, you know, speaks for themselves, right? Like you would say, well, who do you think about when you think about new atheism? You'd probably list one of the horsemen, probably Richard Dawkins,
oh, yeah.
Right?
Which sure.
is a
yeah,
which
yeah.
is a favorite targeting individuals for religious groups. So maybe. If there is any residual, oh, we rely on these people, maybe that's more of a consequence of religion saying, oh, these are the leaders of the atheist movement. Do you think that in general people don't really have a good idea of what what happens under, like, what happens beyond what they see, right, or what they hear in most of the mainstream media, like the grassroots element of all atheist movements? Do you think that's invisible to most people? Like, is there stuff that's happening right now that the average atheist is not aware of, just basically because it's not getting talked about?
That the average atheist or the average?
I would say the average atheist. I mean, like, let me give you an example. I mean, you know PC Myers from Pharyngula. I had him. I interviewed him on one of my probably my first interview, and the hilarious part is that probably half of the people that listened to the show had no idea who he was.
Yeah, that did surprise me.
And the reason why most people have listened to the show, like I would probably say that most of the people that are going to be listening to this interview have no idea what your organization is. And I'm like, my question is, most of these people that are feeling isolated and generally get a little bit of news, say, hey, Richard Dawkins said this, you know, the kind of stuff that you would find passively. What do you think that people aren't seeing that if they were aware of, might change their entire attitude really about the movement. You know, like the people who say, oh, nothing's going on, I can't make a difference, and it doesn't matter if I get involved. Like, how do you get that person to say, there's a shitload of stuff happening in the background, you've got to get involved?
Well, there is a shitload of stuff happening.
Aha, I got you to swear finally. Know, yes,
we've got such a media-driven society here. It is tough to be seen much through anything through all that haze of all the competing different voices out there. And you're talking about a free thought movement that probably, in its collective entirety around the world, may be raising maybe $250,000 a year versus, there are so many religious organizations out there, each one of those with $10-20 million annual budgets to push their message out there. So I can certainly understand why it's hard to see what's going on, but there are a lot of communities out there, a lot of groups out there, the work in the United States going on with the free thought, national organizations coming together and forming a lobbying group in Washington, D.C. to press our secularist issues. That's significant. And for what little money we have, I think we do a hell of a lot of work, a lot of good work.
Well, I think people have to keep in perspective the amounts. Like you mentioned, like a conservative estimate of how much we could probably raise. I think it's funny that you look at the Catholic Church alone in Europe makes about $900 million in various tithing and donations. $900 million. That's practically a billion in Europe. What will we do with that kind of budget? You know what I mean?
Right, right. And people don't see that. You don't hear that about the money behind all the religious movements. But it's just boggling.
Well,
it's overwhelming for us free thought leaders to figure, how are we ever going to match up to something like that?
Well, we have that horrible, that thing we were talking about before, where people are like, oh, if you try to organize, if you try to get money, you're doing the exact same thing that religious people are doing. I mean, I have a bonus show that I try to get people to pay for. That's my whole approach to it. And you still get people that are like, why should I support you? Despite the fact that, at least to some degree, I'm like, well, I'm trying to get the word out, bro. Like, it's not just about... I'm like, if I was a religious man, I think I'd be wealthy by now. I think I could just be one of those prosperity
I'll have to admit, that crosses my mind too. I could make so much more money if I pretended to be religious.
Yeah, like look at what is his name? He's that prosperity gospel, Joel Osteen. You look at that guy. He goes around church after church telling people that if they donate their money to him, God will favor them and then get them to have Mercedes Benzes or whatever. I mean, the gall. And he paints it in this light of saying, oh, well, these are all great things. God loves you, and all you need to do is be positive. He sells this positive, upbeat message, but at the same time, his whole thing is, give me your fucking money. And meanwhile, this guy is just like, he's raking it in. He's like, Benny Hinn, like how much does Benny Hinn make every year? Like $100 million?
Yeah. And of course, neither he nor Benny were the first to do this. There's a long line of religious scam artists. What was the Rajneesh that owned half of Oregon back in the 80s or 90s?
Well, Teddy
his followers would give him a new Mercedes-Benz every year as a praise gift, a love gift. It's back to the cult personality, and you're right. A lot of atheists see that, and once again, they think, "Oh, that's something religions do, so I'm not going to participate in that in any other arena." But in fact, again, that's a place where religious groups are so successful in convincing people that that God is involved in the in how you support organizations, and of course, it's not. But it is how things run. God seems to do so many miracles, except to have money.
Well,
I don't know what that's about.
He's broke. Don't you know?
He's always broke.
Needs
yes.
Money. He needs your money. He needs 10% of your money to do whatever he needs to do. Presumably, he made a new bathroom or something like that up in heaven, costing a lot of money for all these upgrades. I don't know what it is. Maybe more mansions. You know, apparently we're all getting mansions. Well, these don't pay for themselves. You need to buy them now.
Exactly. And the installment plan is the best way to do it.
Well, the 10% for the rest of your life. Let me ask you this.
But you know, when you step back as a skeptic and you look at how the religious communities use that money, and you see it's mostly used to promote themselves. You see the waste and the opulence of the leaders. Of course, you're not going to want to support anything like that in any other arena in the free thought community or elsewhere. But believe me, we are nowhere near anywhere that danger of happening. We are all basically scraping and struggling. Atheist Alliance International is all volunteer. None of us get paid anything for this. It's definitely a passion of love, and that's the way it is for most of the secular community that I've seen.
I know, and I'm greedy. I'm actually trying to make a living doing this. I'm crazy. I think I'm crazy. Let me ask you a question. Now I remember you were telling me that you used to be a believer. I want to hear a little bit about your story. About how did you go from, say, being a believer to now being the president of like a large atheist organization? Like, how does one go from one to the other? Or is that a huge story, or like it can be condensed? It's like, well, once upon a time when I was on the riverboat, blah blah blah.
The short version of the story is get sucked into Scientology for a year. That'll pretty much dissuade you of any religious thoughts you might have.
Really? So you are a Scientologist?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I never bought into it, but I was involved in it out of college for about a year and saw just the ugliest side of religion that I could imagine. I had grown up a liberal religious Methodist, and church to me wasn't dangerous. It was just boring as hell.
its own kind of danger.
Yeah, but in college was a tough time for me. I was a lot younger than most of my cohorts, and it was the first time I was away from home, so I was really lonely, and had been raised to, go to the church that had all the answers. They've been around 2,000 years. Of course, they know everything you should need to know about life. So I go, so that's what I did. And I got just the most twisted response from the pastor, who seemed to be the most sexophobic individual I'd ever met in my life, who basically just said, lustful thoughts are evil, evil, evil until Jesus finds you your wife. And I found that so unhelpful and so insulting. That kind of ended it for me there on the Christian side.
Well, not just insulting, terribly
bored. Christians got this messed up. You know, what are these other faiths? Maybe they've got it figured out. And, yeah, soon thereafter, I stumbled across somebody offering a survey at a mall, and that turned into getting involved in the local Dianetic Scientology mission. And I wasted a good year just trying to figure out whether that was real or not until I finally got fed up with that and walked away.
Well, maybe you can answer this question, because I have been getting conflicting information. You might not be an expert in this because it's only a year, but I hear that even though Scientology will deny the story of Xenu, that if you try to republish the story, they will sue the pants off of you. Is that true?
They're very lawsuit happy. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What would you recommend? Let's say there's a curmudgeon atheist out there who decides, I want to do a little comic book explaining what Scientology is. Would that person face being sued out of existence?
It's a legitimate danger. Yeah. Most of the anti-Scientology websites are published out of Iceland and Norway, because that's about the only place they can do it without Scientology lawyers showing up and slapping lawsuits on you. I don't know. I've thought about doing that too. I actually have done a lot of research on the Scientology church, and it's just actually the headquarters is down the street from me in Los Angeles here. So I've been tempted to do that, but that has been a big question in the back of my mind. How far can I go without really opening up myself and my family to some real major legal harassment?
I just don't even understand how any organization that claims that they're a religion is actually allowed to sue anybody.
I've never understood that either.
Can religions have copyright?
That should be a disqualifier right there, right?
It should be. I mean, one of the most fascinating things I ever found about Scientology is that there's this group of people that I would call probably the real true believers of Scientology that think that everything should be free, and they get routinely sued. You're like,
yeah.
These are the heretics of Scientology being sued into oblivion. And my whole thought is like, well, listen, if you're trying to sue someone, you're still using a branch of the law. How does the law recognize a religious institution's right to maintain copyright over what they believe? I'm very curious about that. I just don't understand. Like, am I not getting it? Very confused. I just thought being a religion sort of automatically meant that there were certain things that you weren't allowed to do. But I guess I'm just crazy.
Like lie.
No, that's a prerequisite. Come on now. You must lie. You have to tell people even what you might regard as noble lies, right? I probably believe that a significant amount of people that are in high-ranking authorities within these religious institutions probably think they're doing the world a favor, even if they don't necessarily believe in what they say. They're saying, like, this is the noble lie. This is what people
maybe
need to
believe. Maybe some do, but do you really believe that Pope Benny really just had no idea there was all this pedophilia going on and it's just a isolated case somewhere in a few pockets in the world? Do you think he really believes that?
Yeah, but I'll rephrase it. I definitely knew, and everybody who just did any amount of research knows that he knew about these pedophiles, but the real thing, and I think this is where they shield themselves, is that they may view it as an entirely different scope. They view it as sin, right? They tell themselves, this isn't against the law, this is just human beings being the shitty pieces of crap they are, and it just happens that no one is immune from that. And they could literally believe that. They could just say, oh, the only thing that this person needs is a spiritual cleanse, like kind of like one of those colonics, but for the souls. And they're saying, like,
human beings are all corrupt with original sin anyway, so who are we to judge them, I guess, huh?
Exactly. I think the problem comes for if you have a base, if your basis, your standard, if you will, is such a shitty thing, then I don't think you'll ever be surprised. I mean, they probably saw the Inquisition and said, yeah, we probably went a little overboard, but hey, we're sinful too, right? This is just human nature. We're all pieces of crap.
I think that's how it is. And that, to me, that's obviously one of the major dangers and evils of religion, is being able to twist your thinking in such ways to come up with those kind of justifications for whatever. Was it Steven Weinberg that said, good people do good things, bad people do bad things, but it takes religion to make good people do evil things?
I think it is, but I've never been good with quotes, so and trust me, there is someone out there who's going to say, no, it wasn't, and I'll hear about it. I'll forward you that email if it wasn't, and I'll be like, I didn't technically say it, I just agreed with it, so I'm just a follower. So after that year of Scientology, so you saw what was going on, and finally, I mean, was it a process for you of non-belief? Because a lot of people, you've probably watched the Letting Go of God by Julia Sweeney, I'm sure. I think it's a must for anybody who's even probably right on that edge of saying, well, I don't know if I believe, maybe I'm an agnostic, because I think that's actually...
That's one of the best pieces to share with somebody who's on the fence, I think. It's so non-threatening,
yep,
and personal, and, you know, a touching story. I wouldn't say sweet necessarily, but... But, you know, I think people can hear that better than they can hear, say, George Smith's Death of God, Atheism type rants, or even Richard Dawkins stuff. Julia's a great way for sharing what the worldview of free thought and how you got there is. And yeah, that was how it was for me. I really, for the first 30-some years of my life, I thought I was the only one that didn't get this God thing, that for some reason it just didn't work for me, but everybody else seemed so, oh, of course, God's there. I don't even know why you'd think about it. I spent the first 35 years thinking there's something really messed up with me. And it really wasn't until... I'm a computer analyst, and so when I got a computer and found a browser and linked up to the internet and typed in the atheist, typed in the word atheist, that was when I discovered I was not alone, that there is a whole huge community out there, and there's nothing wrong with having skepticism about supernatural.
And that was how long ago?
Not maybe 15 years ago. So I was fairly well into my adult life before I got to that point.
So let me get this straight. So basically, you once you realized that there was nothing wrong with your idea, because you probably, I guess you said you felt like, if I don't get it, it's just because that's something wrong with me. Everybody else gets it, so for me not getting it, I obviously
yeah, and I have plenty of people telling me that too. You know, you're making fun of things. You just don't want to get it. You know, that kind of stuff. And for 35 years, that was the answer. That was the only answer out there for me. I didn't know of any atheist writers. I didn't know of any atheist groups. I didn't know anybody else who questioned God in any way. They all had different versions of what they thought God was, but they all thought God existed.
So I guess it's almost like maybe the difficulty for really atheists of coming out or even realizing that they're atheists is this idea that they might view that they're wrong.
So important. So that's why, you know, Dawkins started something called the Out Campaign about 6 years ago, and it was just letting the public know that you're an atheist and you're proud about it, that letting other people know that atheists do exist. Most people fill gaps in their knowledge. This is true with the gay community, too. A lot of people, especially back to Prop 8, we were talking about that, talked about the gay agenda and the horrible lifestyles and the degradation of gay people and you know, just what a pox on society they are. I was involved in that campaign, and most people I would talk to, I'd say, really, do you know anyone like that? And they go, well, no, I've never met a gay person, but I know they're like that, you know. And it's much the same with the atheist community. Most of the people who know me have softened up quite a bit from when they first learned I was an atheist. I often get reactions, very strong adverse reactions of, you're an atheist? How can you be such a corrupt and amoral person? I don't seem to have a problem with that. I don't seem to have a need to consume babies or burn down buildings or things like that. I seem to be a productive taxpayer just like everybody else. What was your question?
Well, let's ignore my question because I feel like to some degree you answered it. But let me transition over now to the importance of people getting together and really sort of starting to make footholds in atheism, which is sort of say, hey, let's all get together, let's meet up and talk so that people can kind of get out of this frame of mind of saying, you know, I must be wrong because everybody else is a believer. No, a lot of people aren't, and that leads me to this conference you guys are holding in Montreal from October 1st to October 3rd. Is that right?
That's right, yes, in the Delta Centerville Hotel. On the island down there. And that's one of the big reasons why we have these conferences, to bring people together who share the atheist worldview or maybe wanting to know more about it. Even though when I became self-identified as an atheist, I still found it very difficult to have any sort of language to speak in terms that didn't come out very contorted or
confused, maybe?
Awkward or just hostile, you know,
right,
because
right.
It's like I didn't want to speak in religious terms. I didn't want to talk about spirituality and higher values, higher powers, things like that. But I didn't have anything to replace it with. And I hadn't heard anyone. I didn't have any role models around me that talked in that way. So I knew how to converse in the real world as a secularist. And that was one of the most valuable things I found when I first discovered this community. I went to every national organizational conference I could find for about 5 years just to hear people talk and talk about being a secularist and how they function and communicate. And so that's one of the great things about these conferences, is it gives you a chance to meet others who have done that.
I think the other thing that I quite enjoy, and maybe this is just one of those, oh, you see within your own lens, but I always found that in terms of mental power, like you get a room full of atheists, and you're probably going to have a room full of very, very smart people that reached those conclusions for intelligent reasons. It's not to suddenly say, well, if you're religious, you're stupid. I'm not suggesting that. But what I am saying is, I think that it's an incredible opportunity for people to meet some really fascinating, smart, caring people. I mean, there tends to be the reality of the atheist almost seems to be the complete opposite of how we're typically portrayed by religious groups, of saying, oh, these are immoral, terrible people, and then you realize once you meet them, you're like, oh, wow, they're the complete opposite of everything I've ever said.
I think you're right in that an atheist community or an atheist convention tends to have above average people who are, let's say they're appreciative of knowledge. They crave information and knowledge, and so they want to learn a lot about the world. And they're very well read. They're very well studied. A lot of them have very advanced degrees. But even those that don't, they like talking about deep topics, physics, science, philosophy. You're not going to find in these groups real fluffy, let's talk about the TV show last night. If you like the heady intellectual conversations, these kind of conventions are the places to find those people.
Well, I think too that and this is probably, I've heard some people who've listened to the show that the reason they say they like it is that oftentimes I'll approach topics and conversations that people don't normally get into or talk about. I think that's really kind of the tragedy of religious belief, is that it shuts the door to a lot of questions that people have about existence, life, the universe, because they're saying, like, oh, the answers are just there. God created it, and now forget about it. Well, everybody else that suddenly hasn't had filled in that hole, well, we know about the universe, tend to be much more curious about it. And maybe that's the danger that religion sees in curiosity. You know, I think that curiosity about the universe is probably one of the best things that we have about ourselves. It's that amazing quality that has allowed us to actually see the universe for what it is, rather than just a bunch of campfires in the sky.
Yeah. I think that is one of the downsides of religion, is that they like to stay within safe boundaries. And, oh, let's talk about the birth of Jesus again this year for the 50th year in a row, or 500th year in a row, that's all you hear is you hear the usual story. In a manger, or you hear about, his death. They talk about very limited number of phrases and sections of the Bible, when the Bible is much, much larger than you would ever hear in any church, no matter how many years you spent listening to the pastor. And they would never talk about that. Well, you come to an atheist convention, and you'll find someone, undoubtedly, who knows all those other passages that are far more fascinating.
Yeah, well, my favorite always, and everybody knows this is my favorite, is probably the story of Onan, and for a variety of reasons. Number one, because it's one of the passages that people try to use against abortion, saying, well, God killed Onan because he didn't come inside his brother's widow. And you're like, I just love that story, because every time you talk about it, definitely you'll always get religious people that squirm, because you're speaking about uncomfortable topics. They're like, that's filthy. And you're like, that's the Bible, baby.
That's the Bible. That's right. Oh, one of my favorite characters in the Bible is Gideon and his family. Some of the most bloodthirsty dynasties you can ever read about anywhere, but you don't know about that. In fact, you hear about this Gideon Society keeps putting Bibles in the hotel rooms, and I keep thinking, do they know what their namesake really did?
So, well, give us an example, because I'm sure.
He starts off with his mother, who tended to seduce generals to help her son and sleep with them, and then take a spike and nail their heads to the ground the next morning to kill them off. There's that
family, like a good family
values.
Family
there.
Values, yep, exactly.
And then Gideon's, he had like 80 sons, of which they all killed each other after he died trying to take over the empire. And finally, the one who won, won out to take over the Hebrew empire. By basically putting everybody into a huge silo, everyone who even sympathized with the rest of the family, put them all in a silo and then just ignited the whole thing.
You know, it's really funny, actually. That's the same story of how Vladimir Thieps got rid of handicapped and injured people. He had a big banquet feast, invited them all, the homeless, the the lepers and that kind of stuff, and he torched it down. So who knows? Maybe he got his inspiration from Gideon.
I can't, you know, I was in church a long time growing up, and I never heard any of those great stories. I would have been much more interested in the Bible if I had.
Well, I remember a couple of months ago, there was this pastor, very conservative pastor, who had started preaching various passages, misogynistic passages in the Bible, you know, in 1 Timothy and stuff like that, saying the woman should be silent. And it was really quite hilarious watching some of the reactions of the women that left the congregation saying, oh my goodness, I never, like, how could he say that? And you're like, but it's in the Bible. I mean, that's his interpretation. And if you go around saying, well, that's not the nice one, then I'm like, I don't think you get this whole religious process of interpreting stuff. You're like, that's how he saw it. Maybe you didn't read those passages, but that's your fucking fault, not his.
You know, I have to grudgingly give more respect, I think, on this point anyway, to the more conservative fundamentalist Christians, because I think they're not putting the wild spins on it that a lot of the liberal congregations do.
Well, do you think, I mean, a lot of people, Penn Jillette has said this, and a lot of people say that if you really forced everyone to sit down and read the Bible, that you would have a huge influx of atheists. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, I do, actually. That would be the case. Fortunately, the first book is so filled with baguettes that you fall asleep before you get to the good stuff. So that's its own production, I think.
Okay, so here's my suggestion. And if you like it, then you can throw your whole organization behind this idea that we accept biblical curriculums in schools, but we're the ones who pick the subjects. How about that? That's our compromise.
Absolutely, I love that, yes.
Anybody who's religious who tells you that, that's my comeback, and I'm like, bam, that's going to get him to shut the hell up.
The pastor who made all the news over the past several weeks about burning the Quran, our response was, burn it, you should read it. That's going to be your most biggest inoculation towards Islam right there.
Well, you wrote recently, I think, on your site, that about the Qurans being burned. First of all, was it supposed to be yesterday, right? Did it happen?
It didn't happen.
Okay.
He chickened out. I guess God told him otherwise. God changed his mind, I guess.
God or Barack Obama.
I'd like to know how that conversation went. You know?
God or Barack Obama told him not to do it. And but in any case, you thought the whole notion, it was a bad idea to begin with, but was there not sort of like a kind of a part of you that was that was curious to find out what would have happened if he did it, you know, did go through with it? Like a morbid curiosity? Or do you really think that at that point it would have just unleashed hell?
If he had burned the book?
Yeah, let's say he had gone through with it. Like, I have a bit of a curiosity because my whole thing was maybe it's my evil side that just said, I want him to do it only to demonstrate the fact that religions can't get along. Let's not, you know, like maybe they have this whole ecumenism generally.
I'm hearing from you that you were wondering if he might get a fatwa and have the local Islamic community just raise up an outrage to try to snuff him out. Is that what you're thinking?
At the very least. I mean, I think there were some probably fatwas waiting, you know, some written statements saying, like, just do it, man. We're going to issue 20,000 fatwas simultaneously. I would have just been curious to see if he could have broken a record in terms of most fatwas in a given day. I don't know if we should be keeping records of that, but, you know.
Well, you know, when I was religious, I laugh now, but I think there was a time there, going from religious to secularist, you cross a number of thresholds to adjust your mind. And one of those thresholds I had to get over was treating the Bible as an ordinary book. And truly, I felt uncomfortable as a Christian putting a book on top of a Bible.
Really?
Never occurred to me to actually tear a page out or write in it. And because literally I was thinking, you know, God probably won't like that.
All right, here's a scenario. Tell me how you would have felt at the time. You're reading the Bible and all of a sudden you sneeze and a big booger lands on the page. What do you do? What do you do? It's like Speed, but with the Bible.
Well, I think that's the one I'd swap out in the next hotel room I stayed in.
Is it? Here's my question. You can tell me how evil this was. One of my Bibles I did steal from a hotel room. Bad thing or slightly bad thing. Did I do wrong?
Should taking I the Bible out?
Taking the Gideon's Bible. I just took it. I just took it. Because, I mean, for me personally, I just wanted to have one of every type. I view it as, it's not a sacred book to me, but I kind of get, I wanted every single version of the Bible that came out, just because it's like one of those things. You know, it's like I got a fan to send me the, do you remember a couple of, maybe it was a year ago, when Ray Comfort tried to release that, you know, the Origin of Species with his 50 pages of,
oh yeah, with this diatribe at the start of it, yeah, yeah.
Right, exactly. Well, I got a fan to send me one, and you know, that's a cherished book in my collection of absurdities.
Oh yeah. Well, the trick is to get these without giving them actual any money to support their cause. Which
that is the tricky part. That is
what
the
it's all about. And within hotels, I this is why I understand. Actually, the first planting of those books is generally free, but the Gideon Society does strongly encourage the hotels to compensate for them, and if they replace them, it's pretty much just pay the going rate for it. So every book you take out of the hotel has to buy a new book from the Gideon Society if they replace it.
And I guess it's one of those things that
tradition seems to be fading away these days, which is nice.
Well, finally, we can stop giving them money. It's like, oh, somebody took your crappy book. And you can't get any money now. You can't get any money. Do you have a favorite? Because, I mean, there's probably a bunch of versions of the Bible. Is there any particular one that you'll use, say, in discussions or arguments? Like, do you use the King James? Do you use any
other ones? You got to use the King James. That's just the worst. I mean, it's just the most outrageous. You can barely understand what it says. The people who quote that and then spout off the phrases there, if you say, now, what does that mean? Can you state that in another way? They stumble all over themselves. Well, it means what it means.
Yeah, I love the my most particular one is you ask any preacher what issue means.
Issue.
It's like, why did these? Who has an issue of a donkey? What is that?
Issue of a donkey? Yeah, is that like a registration thing? I don't know.
You must have had a problem.
Not that I spend a lot of time arguing with Christians. I find that rather pointless. And I think Atheist Alliance is not in the business of trying to deconvert Christians into something else either. We're simply trying to connect those who already share a secularist worldview. There's just too many of us out there who are isolated and unconnected, even worry about trying to convince Ray Comfort that he's off his rocker.
Well, there's just some things that are probably not worth your time. So is there anything that you would recommend? Let's say there's someone who's listening, they're like, man, I'm going to go to this Montreal event. What do you recommend for a person who's first time going to one of these things? And they're probably like, I don't know what I'm going to do. You know, like, there's not a lot of people. I don't go to conventions a lot, generally speaking. I mean, I'm a big nerd, but I tend to stay away from the nerd conventions because they tend to smell terrible. But do you have any recommendations? Say somebody's like, yes, I want to go. What is it that a person can do to get the most out of their experience? Like, what do you recommend?
If this is something that you're wondering whether it's worth going, I just so encourage you to do it. You won't be able to appreciate the warmth and the value. I mean, I first convention I ever went to, I was high for a week just on the intellectual
mushrooms.
Stimulation and everything. But we also got the most kick-ass comedy night you can ever find. So if you're looking for, you know, someone to make fun of religion and stuff, you have got to be part of our comedy night.
And from what I understand, I am still apparently doing your live podcast. Is that right? Have I been fired or am I still doing it?
You are still doing that. That's going to be, let's see, is that Friday from about 11 till 2, I think?
I think actually it's 12 to 1 or something like that. Okay. I know that it's the one. I don't know if I'm officially opening up the little ceremonies, but I'm before a whole bunch of things.
We're going to have a welcoming, an opening ceremony that night. So all the stuff that happens during the day is kind of pre-convention. But, you know, last year we usually have a podcast before the convention, and it was wall to wall packed. I mean, people just really enjoy it. So I know they're going to have a great time coming in and listening to yours as well.
So are you saying that I should be nervous and I should be really well prepared? I wasn't planning on doing either of those things, and now apparently there's a huge audience, and I have to look professional. Well, thank you, sir, for dropping down that bombshell.
Too bad. Glad to help.
Okay, well, you know what? I'd like I'd like to thank you for calling in and speaking with us, Stuart. And I guess my whole thing is I have to encourage everybody who listens to the show, if you are close or even if you're far, come and you're going to have a guaranteed good time. Is it guaranteed practically?
Guaranteed. I would say that's an excellent word to use. Yes.
And that comes from the president of the Atheist Alliance International. So
it'll be a spiritual experience. How about that?
Well, considering it's one of those non-words that doesn't mean shit, then yes, you can throw that around. It's going to be spiritual and enlightening and all these other words that don't necessarily have any meaning.
Yeah, there you go.
I'd like to thank again my guest, Mr. Stuart Beckman, for his participation in today's interview. Hope you guys liked it. I know it was a long one. If you like the interview, be sure to tell us. We'll do more if you enjoy them. You guys are the boss, so you know how it goes. Anyways, I'll catch everybody for the bonus show next week. And with that, have a good Atheist Day, everybody.